Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hi, and welcome to Carolla Classics for December 7th, 2019, the show. We're going to highlight some of the greatest moments of the Adam Carolla Show. Over 10 years of podcasting, we're playing you the best clips right here, right now. My name's Chris Loxamana, executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show. And, as always, Carolla Archivist Superfan Giovanni.
Pretty soon going to be over 11 years.
I know. We're closer to 11 now.
We are, much.
So maybe I'm going to start saying almost 11 years of podcasting.
I like it.
In my intro. I don't know. I can't do change. All right. Let's get some clips going. We got a lot for you, so we're just going to roll right into it. This first clip is from 2010, features elite improvisers Rob Hubel and Paul Scheer.
Yep, 7 episodes before they changed formats. 2/3 of Human Giant, Adam Carolla Show 325. Here's a nice little fun chunk of Rob, Paul Scheer, and Adam Carolla. Check it out.
I think it's fascinating with these like new like teen stars like Justin Bieber and stuff. My wife's sister works at an Apple store, and he was doing a show at this mall.
Can I just say how stupid I am? When you said works at an Apple store, I was like, what century are we living in? Like, I pictured her with a cart, and here's the Granny Smiths, and here's
she's like
Pippins.
A very, like a farmer's
wife. Jesus, am I fucking out of it.
This is a red delicious apple. Right
somehow
here.
Being your somebody's sister, it felt like she was, like far away and worked in a
down home.
She's at an Apple store. It's next to Spencer's Gifts and Zucchini Factory. But she would say that there was a show, and all these like 12-year-old girls showed up, and there was too many girls for the mall to handle, so they canceled the show.
This is a Justin Bieber?
Justin Bieber, and they canceled the show, and then all the girls were going back, and then all of a sudden Justin Bieber twittered like, show's back on, and then all these girls trampled each other, again, kind of like running of the bulls.
Wow.
To like get in, like all these girls, like these 12-year-old girls were hot. Like, how can you ever be humble when thousands of girls are like trampling each other just to see you from 300 feet away.
What goes on in the minds of those young girls? Like, did they, if they could get to him, would they like blow him? Like, what would they do?
I don't think it's like that Beatles thing where they just have to scream.
That's my new thing. Justin Bieber beats off on you.
Yeah.
But that that's sexual.
I don't know what they would do.
Yeah. Now, see, you're thinking like a guy.
Yeah.
Guys, we got a plan.
Yeah.
Like when a guy.
There's a goal.
Yeah. When a guy is like a huge fan of a chick and showing up and doing that, he has a roll of duct tape. And
yeah, you're going to murder
ties
her. Yeah,
and an ether rag. That's all in the trunk. Yeah. Like, what was his plan? Just take her to the desert and fuck her.
Cut off
like,
all her hair.
Right, right. Nobody does. They don't know. That's what makes them so ravenous. And that's what. And that.
But what would they do?
Like, I think if they got up to stand next to him and scream. It's like they don't like, or just go see a movie or hug
just
him.
Just once, I'd like to
sexual.
See them break down the barrier wall and get through and just like just
they
rip him apart.
I think they rip.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, rip his dick off like monkeys and like eat his dick and like gouge his eyes out
with
and,
his dick.
Yeah, gouge his eyes out with his dick and then like you know piss on him. Like that would be, that would make the nightly news.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's going to happen.
Well, man, that's going to be.
Look at all those girls.
Yeah, they're going. Yeah,
they're literally a city block.
They're not, so your point, they don't want to do anything. That's the point.
Your point, Paul, was that because he's had all this adulation from such a, he's probably a terrible.
How
person.
Can you? Well, I mean, at a certain point, like if you have hundreds of thousands of women at age 12. Jumping on you like where you have no where do you go from that like like how do you
well it's not like, it's not that you have to be a bad person, it's that people like ourselves and Will Ferrell have been
that we put ourselves in this we're the nicest people ever.
I have been, and I can't speak for your backgrounds, but we've been sort of permanently humbled and hobbled.
Yeah.
My family was so shitty and so unsupportive, and everyone I went to high school with was a dick. And, you know, when I was telling people I was going to do the Groundlings when I was 22. They're like, what the fuck? What are you doing? You're an idiot. No one should do that. Yeah. Why? You're not funny. You know, like, constantly. So by the time we got any kind of compliments or praise, it was far too late for us.
Yeah.
Your brain is like cement. And at a certain point, it's wet, and you can pick a stick up and put your initials in it. Our brains had dried years ago. Yeah. And all the complimentary gum, sticks
gum
in the
is
world,
already on, like the gum has already been into the cement already.
Yes,
it's been broken.
Cannot put your handprints in our brain anymore. Yeah. But when you're malleable and you're 14, of course. You know, I grew up down the street from Molly Ringwald. And Molly Ringwald had Bieber-esque success at that age.
Yeah, so she young.
She's on the cover of Time and Life magazine. Like, I remember there was one.
How old was she when she was doing those movies, like the John Hughes movie? Like
16. She was like literally 16, 17, 18, 15. You know, she was that age, you know, when she was like sweet 16. She was like, you know, 16 cows. Yeah. She was like 16 or, you know, thereabouts. and so it's like, imagine you being a sophomore in high school and you're on the cover of Life magazine on the cover of Time magazine in the same month, and then someone says, why can't you be regular, why can't you treat people normally, or why can't you whatever, it'd be impossible. It'd literally be impossible.
But I think then all of a sudden you have so many people blocking you off from what is normal. Like, all of a sudden it's like, well, Molly Ringwald only likes waters with the tops off. Don't ever give her a bottle with the top line. You know, all of a sudden, like, these rules start to come out about you.
That,
like,
other people,
they don't like this. Yeah, they don't want you to look them in the eye. They want you to, you know, go around. You know, it's like, and then all of a sudden you don't even know what's going on. You think it's normal that no one is looking you in the eye or whatever it is, and you're so insulated.
Well, you do. Yeah, I've experienced it that the people's little entourage is far worse than the person is.
Yeah.
And I used to do work on, so I worked on Katie Sagal's house from Married with Children.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And back
you did, you did actual work on her house?
When I was a carpenter.
Yeah.
I wasn't carpenter of the stars, but there were a couple celebrities, because there's a network of assistants, and the assistants like kind of talk to other assistants, and they go, hey, this guy speaks English and he's honest and he won't go through your underwear drawer and he doesn't gouge you, and like, oh good, have him come to Scott Baio's house and work on some shit.
So
I had this little network, and I'd go to Katie Sagal, and so one afternoon I was going up to her house, and she was married to the drummer from the Rick Springfield band, who was a dick, by the way.
Right.
Yeah, real dick. But she was cool, and I think they got divorced, so that's good.
Yeah, she's married to the Sons of Anarchy guy now.
Oh, really? Good, because he was a dick. And so I pull my truck up her, like, her little driveway, and I pull like into her, like, her little garage area, and I'm loading off my tools and I some cabinetry or some shit I ripped up at the shop.
This sounds like the beginning to a porno movie, like boo,
a cock,
boo.
So I'm unloading shit, and her assistant comes like running up, like, what are you doing? You're parked in the driveway, you know? Katie parks her car there, and I was like, I got to unload all this shit, you know? And it's like, no. If Katie comes back and you're in the driveway blocking her spot, she's going to have a fucking meltdown. And I was like, well, I'm sorry, but I did it because I have to unload all this equipment. I don't want to park up in the hills, windy street, you know, there's no place to park, you know, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, Katie pulls up, of course, like 10 seconds later, like right on cue. Oh, hey, Adam, how you doing? Good. Oh, sorry, I know I'm in your spot. I'm just, oh, don't worry about it. I'll just park on the street.
Nice. Yeah,
this... So she was totally cool, but the assistant is overcompensating.
Yeah, did you hear this thing?
And then I fucked her.
Yeah,
sorry.
Somebody's telling me about Elvis Presley. That, you know, Elvis, I guess, at a certain point decided that he could move clouds, and you know, his assistants would, you know, he'd get out of the car and be like, "I want to move some clouds, fellas," and they would sit next to him, and he would go up there with his hands and just kind of separate clouds, and his assistants be like, "Wow, Elvis,
you did a great job!"
Like, that's bad. You like, you know, like that. Like, the assistants make him crazy. Like, all of a sudden, he thinks
Well, if everyone around you is getting paid, I mean, they're really, it's about self-preservation. They all want to stay employed, and they want, you know, they're going to do whatever and say whatever they can so that you keep them around, you know.
Well, I like it when it gets up to the crazy foreign dictator thing like Kim Jong-il.
Yeah, they do that.
They shoot a round of golf. Boss, another 29. Excellent. Excellent.
Great job.
And that was Rob Hubel and Paul Scheer back in 2010. Rob has gone on to appear multiple times afterwards, and most famously, the...
approaching the DUI checkpoint. Yeah, it's hilarious.
An incredible, timeless drop. All right, we're going to move on with this next clip. This features podcasting pioneer, one of them, Chris Hardwick, most famously known for The Nerdist. And he was on in 2009, joining Adam one-on-one.
Making his ACA debut, so his first appearance on the podcast. It's on the morning show bit. Back on Loveline, he was filling in for Adam. It rarely happened. It happened like maybe five, six times. But he was the fill-in guy, like pre-Striker. And this is like early 95, 96 era. And then once Adam was fully running, he moved on to another radio show, so he couldn't do it anymore. And he kind of stopped appearing on Loveline after about 2000. But he was a really frequent Loveline guest up until that point. Until the radio contract conflict of interest. And then we heard him on the morning show, heard him back on the podcast. They get into his blog at the time, Nerdist, before it was a podcast. And just lots of talk about bowling. His dad was a professional bowler. He's an expert on bowling. Really fun bit of their chat from 2009.
Dear old friend Chris Hardwick. Chris.
Hey, Adam Carolla.
Chris can be found on Attack of the Show on G4, and well, tell us where else we can find you. Wired Science?
Well, I write for the Wired magazine, so you can find me textually in there, or I have a blog called Nerdist.com, and I'm on Twitter all the frickin' time. I'm literally, if you're on Twitter, Nerdist, N-E-R-D-I-S-T, I will assault you with tweets.
Chris didn't, I mean, start off this way. Chris wasn't always a tech guy. Chris started off, I guess, on MTV.
Everyone... Well, Chris was a tech guy before MTV and then didn't realize until a couple of years ago, why am I not getting paid to do this? Like, I've always been a douchey nerd.
Well, I knew the douchey part, but I didn't know the nerd part.
I thought I was a guest. I can't believe...
Well, a guest, much like a roach would be a guest in the Roach Motel.
Like a punching bag is a guest in a gym.
Yes, a good point. A turd would be a guest in a toilet.
In a toilet, right.
Chris I've known. Well, I guess I met Chris way back when he used to come in to K-Rock, back when Singled Out, which was a phenomenon on MTV in the mid-90s.
I was doing the overnight show at K-Rock, and I would, a lot of times I'd be leaving in the morning when you were coming in.
Oh, yeah, right.
So I was working midnight to 5, and then you'd roll in, and you and Jimmy would roll in and on the Kevin and Bean show.
The Singled Out phenom, the thing that's weird about MTV, which is strange, I don't know if you've experienced this, I'm hoping you have, things go from phenom on MTV to I don't really remember that show pretty quickly, whereas I did Loveline on MTV for quite a few seasons, and I did it at almost the same time I was doing The Man Show. I did it simultaneously for a number of seasons, and everyone will come up and go, hey, Man Show, but nobody comes up and goes, hey, Loveline from MTV, which is weird because it was a popular show, but it's somehow erased now, whereas The Man Show seems to go on.
Well, people remember stuff that's a little, I mean, you know, Loveline was... Oh, I have sores on my penis versus guys drinking beer out of tits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I think people are going to remember the beer drinking out of tits more than they're going to remember the sad guy crying because his girlfriend broke up with
him. They remember the tits dine. And horrible name for an orthodontist or rabbi.
Dr. Titstein?
Dr. Titstein. So
I've made these tits from the body of corpses.
They're alive!
I've animated them!
So you start off it with Singled Out, Jenny McCarthy, it is as massive as a show could get on MTV.
Which I didn't expect because I did a show for MTV the year before called Trash, and I thought... oh, well, I've been hired for MTV. My life's, I'm going to be living the sweet life now. And it turns out that was not the case. It didn't really change my life much. And so when Singled Out came along, I just thought, well, here's going to be another show that I'll just have, and I'll be thankful to have the job because I just got out of college, but it's not really going to change my life. And it actually ended up being a pretty successful show.
Now, MTV never really pays.
No.
But their payment is, well, people see you and you can go get paid somewhere else.
That's what
right?
they use, because they kind of give you the look. We'll hire you with no experience. We'll pluck you out of anonymity. We're not going to pay you, but your payment is exposure.
Right.
But I feel like oh, yeah, go ahead, Danny.
That was Enzo Ferrari's angle. If you drive on my Ferrari race team, that's good enough. No payment is necessary.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right.
It is kind of, you know, listen, for that matter, K-Rock was sort of that way when I started off on radio, which was, you should be paying us for this kind of exposure.
The reason I started working at K-Rock was when Singled Out premiered, not that anyone cares, but Jenny and I went in to promote on the Kevin and Bean show, this dating show that we were doing, and we just started fucking around a lot, and for whatever reason, I remember Frank Murphy was the producer of the morning show.
Yes.
And he ran in and he said, Kevin Weatherly, the program director, is on the phone and he wants to offer you a job. And I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a joke, but he hired me, and I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be making MTV money, which is decent, then I'll be making radio money. But then I found out radio money was $75 a shift.
Right, and MTV was $80. And again, it's exposure, and I guess you could argue, I mean, I said as much to my jack-off buddies from the Valley. I worked for K-Rock for free for, I don't know, 6 months, and then eventually somebody figured out that I should be compensated, and I think I got $50 a bit. And all my jack-off buddies from the Valley said, $50 a bit, they're ripping you off. And I said, I know they are, but I should be paying them for this kind of exposure because I'm going to parlay this into something else. And so what? They give me a raise, and they give me $75 a bit or $100 a bit. Does it still really amount to anything?
Right, right.
What's the difference between poor and poorer? You know, it's still nothing. And sure enough, I got signed by William Morris and ended up doing Loveline and stuff like that.
It's sort of a precursor to the sort of economy of the free that we live in now, where it's like, yeah, you put your stuff online for free, but you're getting exposure. You know, then when you do live shows, then that's where you can charge your money or whatever. You know, you have to get known first, then you can worry about making money.
Yes, and the people that are sort of, you know, penny wise and pound foolish, they want to go for the kill at the beginning. They end up, I remember pretty easily, as if it was yesterday, I think Ricky Rackman was supposed to host MTV on Loveline, mm-hmm. and he just wanted like an extra couple $100 a show, and they were like, fuck off. And they got rid of him, and he went to McKenna VW and started selling Jettas, and they just got me. Mm-hmm. And the moral of the story is it's okay to be greedy, but you can't be greedy on the first date.
Right.
Man's got to know his limitations.
Open the door. Let her think you're a gentleman.
Don't grab the sniz when she opens the door.
Right. Don't go Dutch on the first date.
Right.
Make her think you're Sir Walter Raleigh, and then start with the roofies.
Yeah, don't whip it out on don't whip it out when you're ordering your entrees.
Yes,
and then go, hey, this isn't going to suck itself. Like that's not gonna.
Now that's what you want to do, and that's what you're thinking, and that's what the end game is. But just see if you can get to date 3.5 before you begin that sort of behavior,
exactly.
And then you have a decent chance of not sucking it yourself.
Really, really sink your talons in before you before you start trying to hump anything.
So, Chris and
I—we're still talking about the business, right?
Basically, came from the same school in the same place, and went through K-Rock and went through MTV together. And Chris, your journey though is a lot more interesting than mine because you come from Memphis, mm-hmm. and your dad was a Pro Bowler. And the great thing about being a Pro Bowler is Billy Hardwick, who was Chris's father, won 18 PBA titles and was the first to capture the Triple Crown, which I don't even know what the Triple Crown is.
It was three big tournaments.
Uh-huh.
It was like the Firestone and two others that I don't remember, and he won it. And he's a Hall of Fame bowler. Like if you're in the realm of professional bowling now, he's one of those hotshot old timers that right. you would, you know, like Fast Eddie. He's a Fast Eddie.
Did people know who he was, who you were? Did it help? I mean, it's not like you ever got laid when you came out to L.A. and went, you know, I'm sure, hey, no, hot 19-year-old blonde, I'm sure Hardwick sounds very familiar to you.
That's right.
The same one that won the Triple Crown, the Brunswick Open in 1971. And
no. That kind of ass is 52 and divorced.
Right.
Oh, the Hardwick. All right, let's do this. And then,
yeah.
And then you feel bad
about
yourself.
Let me lift my penis so you can find my vagina.
And then you have to take a shame shower.
Right.
But ultimately... Yeah, no, the bowling thing didn't really help in that realm. But what's interesting is my dad was a pro bowler in the 60s when it was actually like a premier American sport, you know, before salaries and football and it, like everything went up.
I know it'd be on Wide World of Sports
every Saturday. Well, even before ABC's Wide World of Sports, in the 60s there was a show called Championship Bowling, and it was on every Saturday, and it was like one of the most popular shows in the country. Everyone knew about it. And my dad... I always want to make a movie about how in the 60s bowlers were treated like rock stars. And then there was just a fat slide into weirdness.
There was Bowling for Dollars,
right,
which was a popular game show, and just the fact that there was a primetime or big network game show that surrounded bowling, mm-hmm, would suggest that it was much bigger than it is now.
Right.
But so your dad was a little bit of a rock star.
He was.
Back then.
Oh, he's got the greatest, and there he's a, it was bowling, but he has the greatest stories about, oh yeah, I remember when in the 60s I was bowling a tournament in LA and this guy at the local Jag dealership gave us a couple of, you know, whatever the models, what are the XK or whatever?
Sure, XJ,
XJ, and then, you know, we were just drunk doing 120 down the 405. I'm like, these are awesome stories, but now it's not so glamorous.
Your dad must have had some great outfits and some great pictures from the 60s and 70s.
Well, in the 70s more, in the 70s, everything just looked like a quilt, you know? It was just like weird patchwork and a lot of hair feathering. And in the 60s... All their hair was slicked back. They were very nondescript. They had, you know, nice sort of collarless shirts tucked into, like, you know, thin pants.
Yeah, the thing that's great about bowling is the uniform is whatever you left your house in, plus the shoes.
Right.
So you could let your freak flag fly. I mean, when you watch the NFL, the NBA, here's your uniform, put it on. But some of those guys from the 70s, crazy collars, mm-hmm, crazy Nehru jackets. I mean, just crazy ensembles.
Yep.
Did your dad have the sideburns?
Yes. Yes.
Did he have the big hair? Did he have the crazy collars?
Yes to all of that, Adam Carolla.
I'd love to see some pictures
of that.
I
have some pictures of him winning tournaments and, you know, with that getup. He retired in 76, I think. But I think I still have some photos. My favorite thing of his was my dad was the first athlete to do a beer commercial. He did a beer commercial for Miller High Life in 1969.
Really?
And after he did that, they wouldn't let active athletes do beer commercials anymore because they thought it sent a bad message.
Right.
So after he
but
did that...
But for bowling, for the love of Christ?
I know. You have to swim through a river of beer to get to the pins. But right. But after that, they made sure that athletes were retired before they could do beer commercials anymore. But I had this great black and white commercial of him like picking up a 6-7 split in an empty bowling alley. It was really cool.
And... Now, 18 PBA titles means you got to be on top for a pretty long time, right?
Yeah, he pretty much, I know he was Bowler of the Year in, I think, 63 and 69 or something like that. And yeah, he had a good run. And then just in the 70s, he kind of just lost his passion for it. And he still, you know, my dad retired when he was my age, and he still, they did like a top 20, or they're like the top 20 bowlers of last century, and my dad was still like 13th.
How do you do that, though? I mean, and then what does your dad go on to do
after that? He opened a bowling center.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
You know, you can stay with what you know. He opened a bowling center in Memphis in 81. And
did you bowl? Did he pressure you to bowl? Did he give a shit?
He never pressured me, but I you know... I grew up, my parents met because my mother's father owned a couple bowling centers in Florida. My dad was bowling there. Hopefully they were, you know, I worked out the dates. I think they married before she got pregnant. And I grew up in a bowling family on both sides.
I'd guess that your parents are probably still together because your grandfather had a bowling center and your mom knew what she was getting involved with.
You might be wrong in that assumption. The marriage didn't turn out very well at all, and they're not together anymore. Because you can't pin down a bowler, baby. He moves like the wind.
Since your grandfather...
and by wind, I mean a fart.
Your grandmother divorced your grandfather?
Well, sort of. She passed away. And
that's the
thanks for bringing
divorce.
That up.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
So are you a really good bowler?
I was. You know, it's funny. Well, this isn't funny. This is really embarrassing. But when I was a little kid, I bowled like on television, like on talk shows and stuff, because I was really good. So I bowled on the Mike Douglas show against Jimmy Walker. Like, all these weird...
Oh, so it was sort of like Tiger Woods when he was four going on the Carson show.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it was a phenomenon.
Exactly.
How old would you have been?
8, 9, 10, 11.
And when you were 8 years old, you could bowl a 175 game?
Oh, I almost bowled a perfect game when I was 11. I was 10 strikes deep, and then I left a 10-pin. So
wow.
Yeah.
So, like, my best game is probably like a 180, 181 or something. I thought I was in a zone, like I was bowling out of my mind, and I probably bowled like a 181.
Well,
you would average a 181 when you were 9.
Oh, yeah. But the bowling centers had everything for a kid growing up in the early 80s. I would bowl 5 hours. And then I would go play video games, which were still a relatively new phenomenon at that point. And I was totally happy.
Oh my God! I mean, what a crazy euphoric childhood or idealistic childhood. Going to the bowling alley. We had one that was over on Ventura Boulevard, still there, and you'd get out there 2-3 times a year, and it was always. Bowling was always a little bit too rich for our blood, but you could. It was a little exotic. Cost you had to rent the shoes and get the ball. Like we could afford to do it like once every a couple times a year, but then you could only afford like 2 games usually. All I remember about that place is they had that video game that was like the POW rescue game. Where on it was a picture of a guy who had another guy thrown over his shoulder.
Oh,
and you had Wolf. You had the machine gun. Yeah, remember, we used to play that game, and I would force you to lay on my shoulder.
Yeah. I would to carry him out.
It was like in the video game. It was like, come on, buddy, we're going home. And it was like the guy you'd have to shoot your way out of. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically Rambo. Whenever we did it at the bowling center, I'd always say, Donnie, up on the shoulder. Donnie'd get up on my shoulder.
And you would work the game.
And I'd be playing the game with him draped over my back.
He'd also use me for air guitar, too.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'd actually play him like an air guitar back when I was stronger and he was lighter. But I don't
lighter?
Say, yeah, you were a little lighter back then. I was a little stronger. Point is growing up and then going from there to the video games, which were a crazy novelty, back then must have been insane for you. But did you want to bowl 5 games when you were 9?
It was just sort of what I did. You know, I literally was bowling like 5 hours a day. I just would go and just bowl and then I played D&D and chess on the weekends. I was in the chess club. Don't laugh at me.
And every once in a while, like now, do you just go out and bowl and just bowl a 265?
Well,
and just
it's
blow
not,
away all the other folks that are it's, in your, you know, go, you know, just out there goofing with
I'm
the
still
company.
Pretty good. It's not fun to go bowling with me because when you, I have, you know, I've got my shoes and I've got the bag and I've got the balls. Like I have all the equipment. So that right there, that takes off like 20 fun points because when everyone goes to just have fun, this is why I'm not fun to go bowling with. I don't drink. And I have all my own equipment, and I can't help but kind of take it seriously. I am the least fun person to go bowling
and
with.
And they'll kick your ass.
But you would, if we just went out this afternoon, you'd bowl at 225, 230?
I'd probably average 195.
Okay, but if you had a good day.
Yes, the answer is yes.
I had a weird thing in that one of the last times I bowled, was for a Kobe Bryant celebrity, like, whatever, charity, tournament-y thing, whatever it was. It was a nothing thing. And I had this weird situation where I had to have my palm operated on from holding the focus pads and boxing for too much. I ended up fucking my palm up, and I had big problems with it. So I had this surgery on my palm. And I had a cast on it for 2 months or something like that. And then they took the cast off, and they said, "Now you got to put this soft cast on." And the soft cast was the thing with the Velcro, and it looked like a
like a wrist guard.
It looked exactly like a bowling wrist guard. It's essentially what it was the bowling wrist guard. And it was on my left hand, and I'm left-handed. So now I show up at the Kobe Bryant whatever. The cast had come off a couple days earlier. I'm wearing this wrist guard, but I don't want to look like the dillweed who brought the bowling wrist guard to the fun celebrity whatever.
Such a dillweed that you wore it from your car into the bowling center.
No. I didn't want to, because I knew three people would see me walking. And yes. What a dillweed. The guy got himself.
I heard he drives with it. What an asshole.
No. And plus, when I bowl my 108, they're going to be going, "Hey, dillweed."
Like, maybe the wrist guard's not working.
Yeah, like when you see the fat guy who's riding the bicycle and he's like in the full like Team Shimano outfit, except for he's got the gut slopping over the bike shorts, and you're like, "Are you really on the team? Do you really run? Really you and Lance Armstrong? Like, you got to earn that outfit. You should be on a beach cruiser wearing flip flops, not in the full blown." So I didn't want to bowl the 108 with the wristband on. So even though my wrist, I had surgery on it and it was all fucked up, I had to take the thing off because I'm so self conscious about it.
I'm surprised you bowled at all. Like, I just getting out of a cast. I'm surprised that
I had gotten. I'm good to go, actually. I was complaining to Dr. Drew the other day about my horrible genes, and he said, "No, you have really good genes." And I was like, "Oh no, I don't. Come on, look at me." And he said, "No, you got your hernia surgery on Friday night, and then Saturday morning you went to work hanging doors." And I was like, "Oh yeah." And he said, "When that happened to me, I was out for a week." And I thought, "Oh, all right, yeah, maybe that is good genes." And then when I got my knee surgery, after Donnie forced me to move furniture up to the second story of our apartment after I blew out my knee playing football earlier that day, it's another story. I got my knee surgery, and I had stitches in my knee, and I got into the biggest street fight of my life, like, later that day, or maybe it was a day or two later after I had this knee surgery. I've always been good with, like, all right, the cast is off, let's go. And maybe I agreed to do this before I got my hand surgery. I can't remember what it was. But either way, I didn't want to be a dillweed with my brace, and I agreed to do it. And I think I just went and sucked. But either way, I didn't want to do it. But now, what is that brace, that guard?
It keeps you from breaking the plane of your wrist. You know, like a lot of people I'm doing this like people listening to the podcast can see what I'm doing. But a lot of people will like flick their wrist to try to, to hook the ball, or their wrist will break, but you know, before they release the ball. And you want to have your wrist solid. Like, you want to have your wrist straight when you release the ball, because I mean, it's like anything else, you know, if you it's a difference between coordinating like one muscle of your forearm versus trying to coordinate, you know, all of the muscles of your hand.
Right.
So it just tries to take that out of the equation, so you're just using as few muscle groups as possible.
Is it possible to be a good bowler and bowl straight? Or do you have to put the English on the ball?
Well, now, yeah, no, because the way that you knock the pins down is, you know, there's a specific angle that you have to get between the one and the three pin.
You've got to hit that pocket.
You have to hit the pocket, and you know, bowling is all about momentum. It's mathematically, it's all about momentum and distribution of that momentum through the pins. So you want to hit the right angle so that all the pins conserve that energy and distribute it equally, so that the pins will come down. I just wrote an article, one of the articles I wrote for Wired. You know, people are like, "I didn't know bowling could be less boring," but thank you, Hardwick. But I wrote an article about how my dad always complained that he doesn't, you know, bowling. He's like, "It's too easy now. The technology, they've made it too easy." And I thought he was just an old man complaining. But then they conducted tests in Wisconsin, of course.
Sure.
Amidst funnel cakes.
They could be on the French Riviera, but they moved it to Wisconsin.
They moved it to Wisconsin and into the snow. They built this robot that would just throw ball after ball after ball.
Uh-huh.
And they determined that, yes, the technology of the sport between, you know, between what the lanes are made of now, they're all synthetic.
Right.
It's easier to maintain than wood, and it's more solid. And the balls now have the cover stock of the balls make mm-hmm. the game really easy.
So it's sort of, you know, in a way, it's like golfing. You know, back in the days, they had a wooden driver. Now they have a titanium driver with the big Bertha shaft and everything.
It is and it isn't. It is in the sense that, yes, you know, you can hit the ball farther, but with golf, you still have to make putts. You know, like, there isn't really a technology that's going to help your short game. That's skill.
Right.
So, but bowling, you know, if you know that the ball is going to grip the lane in a certain way because it has glass particles in it, and it's just going to hit the pocket the same every time, then that's really going to affect your score. Like, bowlers now, the averages are higher because they make more strikes. And when my dad was on the tour, balls were made out of hard rubber.
Right.
So it was more about making spares than it was strike after strike after strike after strike. So
plus, these guys are juicing.
They're juicing. You can see those big Popeye forearms and the... I don't think they will. I think that controversy would help bowling if someone was like, I was juicing. People were like, great, finally, attention for bowling. I don't care how we get it.
Championship games, though, are they still traditionally on a wood, or are they on the synthetic? Or
they're like, on synthetic.
You know, Wimbledon, where it's on, you know, clay or grass?
As far as I know, they're all synthetic because, you know, wood.
And it's consistent.
It's consistent because wood has grooves in it, and you have to resurface it every so often, and it's harder to maintain. But synthetic lanes, like if you look at a lane now, it's synthetic with digitally imaged wood grains on top.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's not wood. It's just a flat synthetic material that's easier to maintain, but is also easier to control. You know, it's easier to control the lanes and what the balls do on the lanes because it's such a constant surface.
Let's talk about Jenny McCarthy for a moment.
So you're saying people would rather hear about a girl who's been naked in a magazine than bowling? I don't know, Adam. I'm not sure if you really have your finger on the pulse of America.
I have a love-hate relationship with Jenny McCarthy.
Really?
Yes.
She's a doll. What happened?
I've found her to be a little bit flaky sometimes, and I got pissed off at her because I went and did her Candy's charity thing, and I spent an entire Saturday filming her thing out in, like, Reseda, and when I was done, it was like, yes, thank you, thank you, thank you, I owe you, I owe you, I owe you, and then she proceeded to flake out on Loveline for, like, the next three appearances. I think one time we sent a car, and she didn't even, like, come down or
that's
something
weird.
Like that. So am I right to think that? Do you guys stay in touch?
I haven't talked to her. Let's see. I hadn't talked to her in quite a few years, and then I just emailed her out of the blue a year ago,
mm-hmm.
and she wrote back and said, hey, it's great to hear from you. Everything's been crazy, and then I hope you're well, and that was pretty much it, which is actually funnier than so I haven't talked to Carmen Electra did the show, too.
Oh, that's right.
And I hadn't talked to her in ages, and I get this weird Facebook message from a guy I used to work with. And he goes, hey, I'm Carmen's assistant now. She was curious to know what you're up to. I'm like, do you have a fucking computer? What's the problem?
Right.
Is she sending an assistant to ask me what I'm up to? Really? So I wrote him back. I'm like, well, it felt so weird. Here's what I'm doing.
Right.
Tell Carmen I said hi. Like, it was so bizarre.
Why would she do that? And then
I don't know.
And it's happened many times that it's people. It's time to bring back etiquette, you know? I mean, maybe Heloise ought to write herself another book for the modern age.
8sleep.com. Every podcast has mattress ads, sure, but there's thousands of them. But the only one out there that uses technology and temperature to give you the deepest sleep is 8sleep. The pod by 8sleep. First bed to combine dynamic temperature regulation and sleep tracking. Oh, God. I could have had a decent childhood if I had one of these when I was young. All I did was sweat and toss and turn. Now I have 8 sleep. Research shows the link between sleep performance and temperature. Of course, you don't need to research that. We all know it. The pod reacts in real time, adjusting the temp to keep you comfortable. The stats say it all. Pod customers fall asleep faster, toss and turn 25% less, and have a 17% increase in deep sleep. You're worth it. Sleep hygiene, super important right now. $150 off plus free shipping at 8sleep.com/M. That's EIGHT sleep.com/Adam.
And that was Chris Hardwick back in 2009 hanging out with Mr. Carolla. Before we get to the next clip, I want to remind everybody, No Safe Spaces is in theaters. Go to nosafespaces.com and find a theater and showtime near you. And also, check out Adam's documentaries from Chassis. Go to chassis.com, get the Blu-rays and DVDs. Or just hit up Netflix. The 24-Hour War and Shelby American is on there. So make sure to watch them, give them a thumbs up, and share with a family. It's a great holiday viewing.
If they're not on your homepage, go down to documentaries, scroll for a bit, you'll find them.
Yeah, Shelby American's the one about the guy in his lawn chair in his garage. You'll see the thumbnail. It's very clear what movie that is. All right. This next clip features one of my favorite comedians of all time, Jim Jeffries. He was on in 2009 trying to convert Adam to be pro John Lennon.
Jim Jeffries loves the Beatles. It comes up quite a bit. I was listening to another podcast recently, and Jim asked somebody who their favorite band was, and he mentioned, like, it was the White Stripes. It was Anthony Jeselnik. He said, the White Stripes? And he said that Jim looked at him like, ew, and just said he liked the Beatles. And I kind of judged him. And this is part of his love of the Beatles. He attempts to explain why John Lennon isn't a terrible person to a very skeptical Adam Carolla. This is from Adam Carolla Show 145, original format, back in September of 2009.
That all the Asian kids, they'd come over. They're a bit older than us, and they'd come over because their dad was working in some company in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And they'd come to the school, and they'd have names like Oriental Asian names.
Right.
But then they'd always decide to give themselves an English name. So they'd be like 17 years old and
right.
Just, oh, I'll give myself an English name. But what they do is they always name themselves that, like Felix right. or Zach, because they've been watching Saved by the Bell.
Right.
You know what I mean? They were never called Jeff and Tim. You know
what I mean? Slater, Zach, Screech, come here. You're going to be late for algebra class.
They all had those, and all the girls are called Millie and Molly and Wendy.
I went to school with many Asians that had crazy, simple Anglo names. It seems it's weird when you see that chick that looked like she just got off the boat, but her name is Mary. Yeah. You know, her name isn't really Mary. And I don't know what there's got to be a sort of name that has a dusting of ethnicity to it, but it's not quite like she doesn't sound like someone from the 50s, Madge.
There's the argument, if I moved to China, would I change my name to Mei Peng?
Right.
Yeah, you know, which was actually...
If you were a panda bear, you'd have to.
Mei Peng, where's it? Oh, that's the bird that John Lennon left Yoko Ono for.
Really?
Yeah, that's the one that he left for a year.
Oh, the bird.
Yeah, the girl, not the bird.
Well, I know in everyone's mind, John Lennon is such a hero and such a visionary and such a whatever, but I'm the only guy on the planet that, A, feels like most of his solo stuff sucked. George Harrison's solo stuff was a lot better than John Lennon's, and a lot of that stuff was just drug-fueled shit. Mm. And then the other part of it was he never stopped talking about how much he loved Yoko, except for he was fucking everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Too.
There's only thing that he has his lost weekend in L.A., which was 2 years or whatever.
Right.
That he just left New York and came to L.A., and just hung out.
I know it's sacrilegious, but if you listen to John Lennon's solo shit, a lot of it is just that shit.
There is Woman, Watching the Wheels, Imagine.
Yeah.
These are good songs, but yeah.
80, but a lot of it is just him high, banging on a piano, yelling how much he loves Yoko.
Yeah.
All right, so we don't like panda bears, but nuts about John Lennon. But, yeah, so the whole thing is...
Lennon,
all right, well, the point is this. He loves Yoko so much, quit fucking other chicks.
Yeah, but he only really got caught... He went off with the other, but that was his assistant, the other one, Mei Peng. That was the last photo of them together, that one where he's naked in a coital sort of thing.
I don't need that photo. I don't
but he was a bad dad, wasn't he?
He wasn't. Here's the whole thing about John Lennon. He loved Yoko, except for he fucked around on her a lot.
That doesn't mean you don't love a person if you fuck around on them. It takes, it's you know.
All right.
I mean, every girl I've ever dated will right now be angry listening to this.
And then he only talked about love, except for he didn't do a great job with his oldest son.
It was a terrible dad.
Very much for him. I mean, and he talked about speed. I mean, here's the thing. I just think it's really easy just to walk around and go, hey, man, how about peace? How about love? How about peace and love? How about peace and love? I love my wife so much. And then everyone just gives you a pass after that. Well, you don't have to take care of your kid, and you can fuck around on your wife, and you can slam as many drugs as you want.
This is why he was shot, quintessentially, because Mark Chapman thought that he was a phony.
Really?
Yeah, that's why. It was the catcher in the rye, the phony must die, all that type of bollocks.
Well,
right?
We don't read books in the United States.
I got my John Lennon story. I was in New York.
But he thought he was a phony.
Phony because he was a big fan of his, and all this, like, imagine that. Because basically, Imagine's a song of communism. Everyone should have an equal amount and all that type of stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
This guy was really into it. And then he finds out that John Lennon's a member of every exclusive members club in New York. And this guy's like, what? This guy isn't a fun-loving hippie. He's a money-grabbing, you know.
I'm the same. I know it's heresy. Mm. George Harrison. Yeah, I like George Harrison. But I just feel the same way about Lennon. I mean, I wouldn't go shoot him, but I just feel like he's talking about imagine no possessions, and he's driving around a gold Rolls Royce.
Yeah,
you know?
Everything's
about, oh, I love Yoko so much, and I'm going to bang this chick. Oh, no, you don't need possessions. Yeah, except for I have this exclusive membership in this club, and I'm driving around in a Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. And so, Chapman.
Well, I went to the Dakota Building in New York where John Lennon was shot. I think a lot of tourists do. And I just went to see where that little archway was. And there's like, so Mark David Chapman, he arrives 2 hours before John Lennon leaves the building, holding the Catcher in the Rye. John Lennon leaves the building.
He's holding an issue of the
Catcher in the Rye, and he's holding the album of Double Fantasy, which had just come out, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a new album. Now he waits. There's a famous photo of John Lennon is signing Chapman's photo, two of them are in the same thing. And then and Lennon goes, oh, what, do you want anything else? And he just sort of stands there eerily. And then John Lennon fucks off in his car. He's gone for like 3 hours. Chapman sits on this step for 3 hours. And eventually Lennon comes back, and then Lennon goes through the thing, and he empties out every bullet out of the gun into his back, right?
Right.
Then he goes and sits back on that step with the Catcher of the Rye and the gun and the album that's now covered with blood that still exists. There's a photo there.
Right.
And he waits for 15 minutes before the cops get there, right?
Right.
Now, I go onto that same step out the front, and I sit down, I get my friend to take a photo of me,
right,
and two security guys just aggressively come up and go, get off the step.
Really?
And I'm like, I'm just sitting. And the guy, I'm just sitting, I just want a quick photo, mate. And the guy goes, get off the step. And then physically one of them lifts me up by my collar off the step, right? And I said, where the fuck were you 28 years ago? Then it all kicked off, and I had to leave.
Yeah, well, I there's probably a fair amount of people that want to, probably just like the same ones that want to take their shoes off and cross Abbey Road or whatever and reenact
famous road. I lived very close to that road in London.
Is that Abbey Road, or is that just where the studio Abbey Road?
Abbey Road is the road. The studio is called Abbey Road.
I'm here.
The funny thing is everyone goes on the wrong crossing. There's two crossings about 20, 30 meters apart.
Uh-huh.
Everyone walks on the wrong one.
Oh, really?
They go on the one right out the front of the building. They actually went on the one further down the road.
So
most holiday makers have got the wrong photo. But
I like that, holiday makers. I like that title. People on holiday.
Holiday makers, yeah.
Well, the other thing, the other thing that's weird about Chapman, if you think about just how weird, sad life is, Chapman tried to commit suicide in Hawaii.
Right.
And
if you're depressed there, you're not going to last anywhere else.
You're not going to last 10 minutes in Riverside,
no,
California, or Baker, if Maui ain't cutting it for you.
Yeah, yeah. But sometimes that can be the thing. At least if you're living in a shithole, you can always think there's a better world out there.
Right.
If you're living in a... That's why...
If you're living in paradise and you're still miserable...
It's the Kurt Cobain theory.
Right.
It's I got everything I want, and it's still a
I'm
bit
still
shit.
Miserable.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Chapman goes and kills himself, essentially decides to kill himself. And he parks his car at the beach, and he watches. He's going to watch the sunrise, and he starts his car up, and he's going to kill himself, you know, probably take some pills or something, but he's going to do carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yeah.
A solid way to kill you. I've had carbon monoxide poisoning, and it's the way to go for anyone who's thinking about killing themselves. And so there he is, you know, staring at the surf, car park, dawn, you know, 5 in the morning or something, and he's dying, and a fucking guy who's doing surf fishing. It's one of those assholes who won't use the pier or boat. Those guys who go out where stand in the water and cast their line into the ocean, especially when you're swimming or something. It's always weird. Like, how fucking desperate for fish are you that you can't go to a lake? But anyway, a surf fisherman finds him and, like, rescues him. Yeah, we got the story pulled up. hold on. And then he gets hired part-time at a hospital, and he gets his shit together, and then he comes out to, you know, New York, and he kills
So really, this Lennon. Fly fisherman killed John Lennon.
Absolutely.
I wonder if this guy feels any guilt.
I don't know. Like, that shit happens all the time, where somebody says, look, if not for your actions, John Lennon would still be alive. And by the way, it's ironic that your actions were saving a guy's life.
Yeah.
But now another life is gone, and a much more important life.
You wonder whether anyone ever saved Hitler's life at a young age.
I'm sure.
Like a Jewish man who worked there.
Yeah. Well, if he was a doctor, there's a better than not chance. He woke groggy, he was alive. It was a Japanese fisherman.
Ah.
Well, there you go.
But you know, because he had a...
Probably named Brian.
He had an he had an Oriental bride as well, didn't he? Because he sort of emulated everything that Lennon did, Chapman.
Yeah, he was tapping on the window. He brought him back to life. Well, you know, the thing about Hitler, I never really thought about it, but you just thought about it for me. Hitler was a hero of World War I, and he was injured. He sustained some fairly significant injuries.
So someone saved him somewhere along the line.
And it's not like I said, it's not like all the doctors in Germany are Middle Eastern guys. I mean, they probably passed through a Jewish doctor or two. There's probably some point where, but you know, 22-year-old Adolf was being pulled off the battlefield in World War I, and somebody was bringing him back to life.
But his hatred of the Jews probably hadn't even manifested at that stage, probably, because the thing is, it was a lot to do with when the after World War One, when they went into their deep depression, where money was worth nothing, and then everyone started to blame. You know what I mean? That's like
I don't know.
You're not born with a hatred of Jews, are you? It has to take time, right?
I don't know. I felt like I hated Jews when I was, you know, a toddler.
I thought you're Jewish, are you?
No, I'm just a comedian with curly hair. No, I could remember hating Jews, you know, when I was, you know, very, very young. I hated them probably.
I always find it funny when you meet anti-Semitic Australians, because we don't have any Jews.
Oh,
it's like, how hard are you working to hate people? It's like people who hate black people in Australia. The Aboriginal is like 1% of the population. That's a lot of effort you're putting in.
Oh, yeah, you're really burning calories. You have no Jews to hate yet. And it's weird. It's like it's like saying, I hate sushi, but there's no sushi restaurants in my town. Like, so what? So who cares?
Who cares? Yeah, just live with it. Carry on.
And that was Jim Jefferies explaining why John Lennon is one of the greats. Skeptical. Adam.
Sometimes heroes just gotta abandon their kids.
All right, let's keep moving with some clips. This next clip is a listener request. Before I read it, I want to remind everybody, if you want to send a request in, it's very easy. You just email us, classics@adamcarolla.com, or you can tweet us at Giovanni Giorgio, at Chris Loxmana. Find us on Instagram, Facebook. Let us know what you want to hear. If there's a favorite moment in the back of your brain, you want everybody else to hear it, or you just want to hear it again for yourself, we'll find it for you, and we'll play it right here in Corolla Classics. This clip is requested from Abraham. He writes, "Hey, Gio, loving Corolla Classics with you and Max Zapata. Eliza Schlesinger was on a while back, and she and Adam had a bit about income tax refund checks being cashed at Walmart. That was very funny. Could you find that one and play it on Classics? Keep up the good work, Abraham.
I found it.
Yeah.
Adam Carolla Show, 1496. Eliza Schlesinger, Drew Bledsoe, not in this portion. Ally McKay and Brian Bishop. This is from January 2015. What's the deal with Ally McKay's news girl? Was she trying out, filling in for Gina, who already got the job? Reveal this scoop.
She kind of was trying out, actually.
That's what's interesting, is yeah. Gina seemed to have the job already, but Adam made a couple statements as if they'd be keep trying out for it. So Gina did the majority of appearances, but there were a couple other people kind of trying out.
Yes. So
okay.
Gina had the history, so she had the cumulative resume, because she's been on, she's covered for News Girl before, so we knew what she was capable of, and we already had in our mind. It almost became beat Gina.
Oh.
When everyone else was trying out, because we already knew Gina was a front runner, we liked her, so we just had to see if there was anybody that we would prefer other than Gina, and Gina just still won.
Yeah, it kind of felt like the right move, but I was right in the sidebars at the time. I'm like, are they trying her out? She just filling in because Gina's trying to accommodate her schedule. Does Gina have the position as a lock yet? I think we're all trying to figure it out at the time. So it's interesting to know. Well, basically that January, Gina was still kind of trying out for it, but basically had the job.
Yeah, and Ally McKay was fantastic. God, she was so funny. And she's now on Kevin and Bean. So
every morning.
Yeah, or just Kevin, I guess, right?
Yeah, Kevin, Jensen, and Ally.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get back to this clip. This is Eliza Schlesinger back in 2015.
January 2015.
Eliza Schlesinger here, everybody.
Hi.
Stand-up special, Freezing Hot. It's available today on Netflix. I tried to watch it today, and I could not get it to download on
Silver.
Matt's Silver. Silver, yes. Something.
Your producer said that, and the sentence sounded like it was, and we tried to watch it, but we couldn't get through it. That's what I was poised, and he just meant the equipment was broken, so.
Yeah, Silver Light. I don't know anything about computers, but I just want you to know that I knew you were coming in, and I told my assistant Matt I shall watch her special, and he could not get it, and then he gave it to Gary, and Gary couldn't do it either. Oh, so.
Silverlight's what they use like on Netflix, and it constantly needs updating. Every time I go to open Netflix, I must update software. It's like I just fucking want to watch a movie.
Well, folks, for those of you tonight, it goes live at midnight tonight on Thursday. Or is this episode airing Friday? Should I
Friday?
Oh my god!
Okay, if you're listening,
it's fucking on.
Dive in.
Yeah. Sorry about the Silverlight, but you can watch the trailer. You saw the trailer, and from that, you can glean how brilliant it is.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's an hour or 90 minutes of that. I don't know. I didn't see it.
Cool.
how do you prepare for a stand-up special? About how long does it take?
For me, it took about... It's so funny being asked this by someone who definitely does it also.
I don't do specials, though. I just go out and do dates and things. So.
I write on stage. And so everything I believe in, if it's funny enough and good enough, it'll stick. And so it's about a year's worth of touring and just kind of honing these bits and sharpening them and polishing the turds and kind of getting them into a structure. And then one day you kind of just open your eyes and you're like, I don't know where these jokes came from, but they did. So it's a weird whirlwind process.
How many days out of the year do you think you'll normally be touring or at least out playing a club?
It just depends. I had a horrible agent. My last agency, who I think either went for a full frontal lobotomy or was just in a coma. So I didn't tour as much as I could, but it's whatever you want, you know. It could be 20 weeks out of the year, 30 weeks out of the year.
What do you want, though? I mean, it's whatever. Some people like it, some people don't.
Sometimes you can't. I like it. I genuinely enjoy seeing the world and our country. And, you know, sometimes you bring a friend, sometimes you bring a boy. It's great when you get to go to a cool place like New York or Chicago or something like that. Not so cool when you're in the middle of Peoria.
Right.
And your hotel overlooks the freeway. And
no.
It's snowing.
I know. We all played the improv in Addison, Texas. And
oh, that's where I'm from.
Sorry.
That's homecoming.
No. You don't like that one? Tell me. I think they still allow smoking there.
I don't
and
like
guns.
It's upstairs in a strip mall, which is comedy where it's not supposed to be.
Sure,
is weird. Like I don't like it when there's a place that was clearly a wiener schnitzel, but it turned into, now it says tax preparation
we
on
see
it,
this
but
frame.
It's a crazy
yeah.
orange. It was an IHOP, but yes. now it says tax preparation. It bothers me.
You can't get away from the structure of your building.
Right.
There's a church's chicken that's now a check into cash, and I'm like, yeah, oh, no. chicken to cash.
yeah, yeah.
Totally.
Once in a blue moon, you'll see a Taco Bell that got converted into
yes.
something, and it's like, who you kidding, bitch?
There's
I know
one,
what you were.
I know what you were. You can't escape your past.
Yeah, that's right.
There's one in Thai Town.
I see those Spanish tiles.
Yeah, there's one in Thai Town that's like a it says like Thai barbecue, and it was clearly a Taco Bell, and you wonder oh. if they got it at a discount.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it's like when sometimes people will buy like an ugly car, but they'll put like a Mercedes thing on it, like in the
yes,
ghetto.
Like, yeah.
No one thinks the body of an Acura.
I
$100,000 car.
I concur. I would happily pay for a coffee table book filled with photos of super familiar architecture.
Chained.
Yeah, that was changed. It would have to be franchised architecture. You just knew it was an IHOP.
Yeah.
You knew it was a Taco
oh,
Bell or whatever. And if it said gynecological exams or whatever, you know, the further you got from what it should be
sure.
the better.
You know,
the better.
It's a Taco Bell. It's a gynecological.
Does this count? Does you see this a lot as driving around, especially by the airport? You'll see old classic movie theaters that are now like medical buildings. Like they're
yeah.
clear to like a movie palace.
Which is sad, right?
Now it's like, oh, DDS, dentist.
On Ventura. There's one that it's like a spa now, and it clearly has like the glass box office in the front.
Yeah, but that's sad though, right?
It's a bookstore.
It's like
super sad. Houses. Used to be art.
So touring is good.
I have one more.
Occasionally gets depressing. Sorry, go ahead.
I have one more. There's on Larchmont Boulevard. There, and I've thought about this. There is a place that is a child daycare,
okay.
like kindergarten that. Clearly, because of the stucco, was a Mexican restaurant
on
at one
the left hand side.
And
yeah.
smells.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
And they've got all these cutouts of kids, and I'm like, still smell the beans. It was obviously, there's no reason to have it stucco
first
with Spanish
off,
tiles.
Can I tell you why I didn't want you to go there?
Sorry.
My nephew died in a deep fryer at that
oh.
location.
Oh, that is unfortunate.
Now, hindsight being 2020, it should have been removed or at
wow.
least unplugged.
Wow.
The equipment
know.
Was included. It was
at least unplugged. That's what my attorney argued.
Like,
or
why
my
is this running still?
Anyway. So go out, tour. Now, a lot of people go, well, I'd rather play a theater than do the two shows Friday, two shows
that's
Saturday.
A luxury to ask that? Sure.
Yeah. Nicer. The two show Friday, two
that's
show
like
Saturday.
Saying, I'd rather have a diamond than this fake gold. Well,
right.
I hope you can't have that diamond.
Right.
It's not always easy. Sometimes clubs pay more than theaters.
Oh, yeah. No, they do. But you do more shows usually.
Sure. I don't mind the work. Like,
okay.
I mean, I'm also saying this, you know, I get a genuine enjoyment out of doing it. I love being up there. So for me, doing the shows is a joy in and of itself. It's my favorite thing.
Well, by the way, February 5th through 7th, speaking of doing shows, Helium Comedy Club in Buffalo, then McFadden's and Grand Rapids. That's March 6th through 7th. And then Caroline's, which is a cool place to play, 19th through the 21st, over still in March. And you can go to the website, by the way, eliza.com, and find out wherever the tour
yeah.
will take care.
It's probably coming to a city near you. We got a lot of dates lined up.
I know you won Last Comic Standing.
Did it.
Does Last Comic Standing, or is it still on?
No.
There's too many shows, and I can't keep track of everything anymore.
Yeah, with all the competition cheerleading shows, it's hard.
Right.
It's, I think it got, no, I think they were starting to film the next season, this season that they're coming, and they, like, stopped mid-season. I never watched the show before I was on it. I didn't watch it, and I didn't watch it after I was on it.
I feel like Roseanne was a judge
she
this
was.
Past year.
I just don't. It's just, it's one of those, yeah. It'd be weird if I was, like, still in the family. Like, hey, guys, remember me? I'm back. I'm the girl that won.
Yeah.
I mean, keep me tethered to this at all costs.
Yeah. Everyone always wants to know, though. Do you hang out with? Do you keep in touch with? The answer is always no.
Absolutely
for all
not.
Of that.
But that's more their choice. Not so much their choice, but mine. But it isn't a pleasant discourse you have when you beat grown men. And
yeah.
you beat them out of $250,000. And a title that pretty much ensures that you have a decent career for the next 5 years at least.
At least be an ugly blonde.
Mm. I did
at
the best
least.
I could. Yeah. I had to wear an eye patch as a child, and my lower tooth has gotten quite crooked.
Really?
So that's the best I can do.
Why did you have to wear an eye patch as a child?
I had amblyopia. And it was a lot of people are affected by this. It's not a weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when one eye is stronger than the other. So you put a patch over the good eye to work out the muscles in the bad eye.
She had to weaken herself. She was so great.
But I have to say this, and I did. I was
that's right.
My light was so bright.
This is not helping you, Eliza.
Nope. People, this isn't like I'm a hot model, being like, I'm just an average person. I am. Comics are an ugly bunch. So, yeah, as far as comics go, yeah, super hot. As far as, like, a room full of actresses go, like, when I walk into an audition, I feel like a troll that wandered out of the forest to, like, hand her resume in with a batch of turnips. Like, I'm a cute enough girl. Personality's a big part of it, but I always get, it's like, as a woman, you're faulted. Even if you don't think you're attractive, then you're being, you're fake humble. And if you're saying you're attractive, then you've got too much of an ego. So whatever makes people happy.
But don't you feel it's that way with comedy as well, where if you just announce to the world that you're super funny, they don't like that either?
No one likes it. The only time it works is for sports, because statistics don't lie.
Right.
Muhammad Ali, I'm the greatest. Well,
right.
Yeah, you are. You were.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
no,
not subjective.
No. And we'll take it. Yeah. I'm trying to think of a white guy did it. Oh, there's a young guy named McGregor coming up who fights in MMA, who's doing a lot of talking. So,
but if you could back it up,
yeah, but he backs it up.
He's from Ireland. It's
I know. It's what they do.
They're an angry and proud and rough people.
So many carbs.
So
so many potatoes.
So hot for a comedian, but not for an actress.
I guess not. I mean, I'm not. I've always said this. I'm not hot enough to play, like, the lead hot girl that doesn't have the funny lines, but not ugly enough to be the quirky best friend that doesn't understand what love is.
Right.
You're screwed.
So yeah. Like, what do we do with her? Either get a lot thinner or, you know, gain 15 pounds.
Do you want to do theatrical stuff? Is that the end game for Eliza Schlesinger?
The end game hopefully won't come for a while, but I think just to be able to – this sounds so cheesy, but – do comedy on bigger and better scales. So whether that is in a movie, in a cartoon, I have a deal with ABC. We literally turned in the pilot to the network today.
Mm-hmm.
So fingers crossed
for
a sitcom. Just to get these opportunities. And I think for any comic, at least for me, to get to do your art uninhibited and get to do it in the way you want to versus reading someone else's lines or not getting to be as funny as you want or not getting to say what you want. You know, like, you have a podcast, you can say whatever you want versus being a morning DJ who can't curse, can't really take a side, you know?
Well, you know, normally there's this thing, which is say whatever you want versus get paid. And it's the deal that everyone makes with the devil. Luckily, over here in the podcast world, we've been able to kind of have the best of both worlds. But when you turn in your ABC pilot, and I wish you luck, but that will be a place that pays you, but with pay comes say. And it's no different than, I say this all the time, it's the people who, you know, the stepdaughter who lives at home and dad is leasing her BMW and she's pissed at stepdad, and I'm always like, if you don't want stepdad to say anything, turn in the car and move into an apartment. And then you don't have to listen to them. And there's this problem, which is I want the car and I want to live at home, but I want that old man to shut up.
Well, I think there's something to be said for paying. Like, I can't – you have to have an imprint, right? So I can't just walk into a network and be like, I'm going to host your next big show. You got to host – you got to do these shows and host little things and take little gigs, and you build to a place where you can say yes or you can say no.
Right.
And so obviously we'd like to all jump from A to Z, but you got to –
well, you brought,
in between.
You brought up Roseanne Barr.
She brought up her.
I did.
Yeah,
apologies.
I mean, no.
I love Roseanne.
I mean,
the other blonde floozy brought it up.
I mean, Allie did, sorry. I brought up Roseanne. Roseanne was a, by all accounts, a screaming cunt on her show when she did a sitcom. When you're number one, you can really do whatever the fuck you want. Fire everyone, throw tantrums, do whatever you want. As long as those ratings are there. Getting back to the athletes, you know, Terrell Owens, as long as he's going up and catching touchdowns, he'll be fine.
Does he still play?
He's the Roseanne Barr of football.
No.
He's gay, right?
He has a hit sitcom on ABC.
Not that good.
He's going to be playing your wacky neighbor.
My wacky, likable, just likable enough black guy neighbor. Yeah, sure. Safe enough.
He, as long as you're producing, you know, Roseanne Barr can't be an insane bitch while there's no ratings going on,
right?
Or before there's any ratings. Once you hit number one and it's been 25 weeks of the same, then you can. I hope you don't, but you can do what you want to do. And so, if you want that juice, you have to kind of sneak up on it,
right? So you're saying hide your bitchiness until it's time to strike.
Yes, swallow your feelings.
Swallow your feelings. I think that monster lies within all of us, but you know, a lot of really successful people that I've met aren't horrible because there's no reason to be horrible when you're at the top. I can understand being angry if your creative vision is being compromised. Like if you really want a scene and it's your show and they're saying no for some dumb reason.
Mm-hmm.
I had that experience. I did a pilot recently. I've done at least 7 talk show pilots mm-hmm. for like bubblegum networks. And we're sitting there and some executive who probably just got promoted to executive like last week, who knows,
yes.
gives me a note that made no sense. It didn't go with the notes. It didn't go with the show. And I was sitting on set and I had done enough that I didn't care if it went. It didn't go. So I got my wish.
Right.
And I looked right in the camera. I go, I don't know what 27-year-old fucked her way into this position, but right. I'm not changing the joke.
Right.
You can bury me. You have to pry it out of my cold, dead hands. I don't give a fuck who's listening. And they were like, all right, we won't change the joke. But it was the only battle that I picked.
Right.
So you have to just, I don't know.
It is a weird process. It's kind of like Navy SEAL training.
Like just when they're
exactly. the buds. It's like they're sitting there on your back doing scissor kicks and they're spraying you yep. with a hose.
I saw American Sniper.
Just to see.
I saw G.I. Jane.
It's almost yeah. like just to see if you can take it. Like yeah. just to mm-hmm. see how much fucking shit and aggravation and insanity and conflicting notes. And like I used to say, when you're doing a run through, when you're doing a network run through.
I haven't done. But I'm listening.
It's fucking horrible.
Sure.
When yeah. you're doing a network run through and you're in a theater and you went to when we taped my mm-hmm. pilot mm-hmm. over at ABC or NBC CBS. Or whichever, CBS. Okay, there you go. Still fresh. The wounds are still open. You sat up in the bleachers, mm-hmm. correct?
Yep, sure did.
Okay. And then there's about 20 foot of floor, and that's where all the cameras go. Mm-hmm. And then there is your bedroom and your kitchen and your dining room, which have walls on 3 sides and are open sure. to the bleachers, right? When you do the network run through and the network needs to hear it pushed all the way through and they're going to give you a bunch of notes on it,
right.
they could easily sit in the bleachers. Those are where the chairs, that's where the seating is, and sit up in a little bit of the shadows up there, get a nice bird's eye view of what's going on, hear everything, and
experience
do everything.
Experience like the audience. Experience
instead,
it.
They fold out chairs and they put it right on the fucking edge
so it's like a play.
Of the thing.
Yeah.
So that when I am talking to my 8-year-old son who's sitting across from me at the fucking breakfast table, I see Nancy Tellum's head right behind his. 3 feet behind his. So I'm like, listen, buddy, if you're going to play. But I'm looking at a 55-year-old woman's face while I'm talking to Buddy about playing T-ball. Why are you sitting there?
Why is it? Well, but I think executives.
They want to see how you're going to do.
You like, think so?
I really do, because I think it's like, listen, you guys. Go sit up in the fucking bleachers and watch this run through.
Like normal paying customers.
Well, if you're watching a run through of a play,
sure.
would you stand on
no.
fucking stage?
But it's I think that trip. Therein
yes.
that lies the dis. I mean, I like you always think people are out to get me, but I do think that's just an illustration of the disconnect between the talent and the executives. One is right brain, one is left brain. And I'm, so I also feel like for you as a comic, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do even better. I'm used to having you right here. I think there's so many moments in my life for being a stand-up has come in handy where you can turn it on, or not so much a network thing, but anyone trying to mess with you and you're like, oh, yeah, here's my dick.
It's such huge. A – yeah, I usually
you go ahead and laugh into the mic. That way people know I'm making a joke.
I say – I use my sack because it's more prodigious, but I get what you're saying.
Comics have a way of doing that.
We have a
luxury. They, we can do that.
They then have a notes meeting.
Yeah.
That I, as the creator
mm-hmm.
and star of the show and writer of the show, cannot be in on.
Not pretty. Right.
Because they want to talk about me
right.
in this notes meeting.
Can he be left
so late? I have to go sit in the trailer and wait till they're done
sure.
talking about me. And then it's such a fucked
it's a
up
process.
Scene.
It's a weird process and no one communicates. And I just think... if it were simple, everyone would do it. So it is a mind-numbing process. I will say this. The people at ABC have been great thus far. So
is this a talk show? Is this a sitcom?
It's a sitcom.
And you said animated before, but I don't know what that means.
I mean, I would do a cartoon. I love
right,
cartoons.
Right, but this is a sitcom.
This is a sitcom with humans.
Multicam? Single cam?
I like single cam. I prefer it. I think it's more introspective. I think it's more personal
mm-hmm.
And more intimate. I will say, having written... 2 screenplays that I wrote one, and it went to this company. We don't have to get into it. And I'm sitting there, and I wrote it to be in it. The character is Eliza. And they're like, who should we get to play Eliza? And I'm like, I'm not. I don't have a hump. I can play myself. Can we just make it for like $20? I'll play. And just like sitting there and listening as they're talking about other actresses, and just completely as the writer, you're just being discounted because they think of you. And it's, you want to throw a chair through a window.
Let me give you some advice.
Let's take it.
If you would like to make a movie and you'd like to star in a movie and no one will let you do that, go make a movie yourself. I've done two of them. I just finished my second one. It's pretty doable.
Do you want to be an EP on a movie about two girls traveling across country?
What's the budget? Who do I get to have sex with?
I'll have to. Whatever you want.
No, I'm telling you, it sounds like, oh my God, no. It's pretty doable. It's pretty doable.
I guess I never thought about that.
You really can do it, and you'll learn a lot more, and you'll get a lot more out of it. You can raise the money. You can crowdsource the money. You can call on people. You can write the script, and you can shoot it.
It's actually – the script is written, and the notes from the director have been given. It's one of those things where, you know, you ask yourself the question, do you want to do it that way? Or do you want to do it with possibly a major studio? I'm not going to go into names. A major studio. And at the end of the day, is it the worst thing in the world to have a large budget film that you wrote? And then again, it's a stepping stone of, I wrote that, now I can do something else.
But again, understand, like Stepdad leasing the BMW, once they give you the money, now it's time for Eddie Gordetsky to come in and punch it up.
Yeah.
And you got a problem.
It's in the contract. I only do punch-ups.
The problem is, okay. All right. They will try to change things that you will not... You will not have the autonomy that you would like. But don't get me wrong. I would love if Sony just gave me a bunch of money to make movie. I just realized it wasn't going to happen. Went and made my own movie. And you can do it.
I think it all depends. And you obviously know more about it than I do. But I think at the end of the day, it all depends what your bottom line is. For me, I guess I'd be okay. I could always write another one. It isn't like this is the one thing I had. I'm a great sometimes you hold on to stuff just to fuck with the person who you think is trying to fuck you. I'm trying to buy a house, mm-hmm. and the person I'm buying it from, I got it really cheap. And then somebody else came in and asked bid over asking. So they're hoping very much that I drop out of escrow.
Right.
And so they're making it difficult. They won't fix certain things, and they won't. There's a water heater that's broken. They won't fix it.
Sure.
And they're hoping that I back out over a $1,000 water heater.
Right.
Nope. And because they're such assholes, and I'm pretty sure that that realtor's on cocaine, what I'm going to say is, you don't understand. I'm taking your house. And it will cost me $1,000 because when I flip this thing, I will make $400,000. And so it's worth it to me just to fuck you to not let you keep your house.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't put a gun to your head to buy it. Mm. Don't fuck with me. I'll cut your power lines.
Yeah.
Thank you. Hey, girl power.
Oh, man. What a mouth. Speaking of mouth, smart mouth. All right. Shall we do a little news, Allie?
I'd love to.
Let's do it. Eliza, you hang in.
The Adam Carolla Show.
Yeah.
Your source for the news that matters. Or random stories that piss Adam off.
All right, you guys. A Silver Spring, Maryland couple is facing a neglect investigation for letting their 10-year-old son and their 6.5-year-old daughter walk home alone from a playground that's about a mile away from their house.
What?
Yeah. How old are the kids?
10 and 6 and a half.
The son is 10, daughter 6 and a half.
10's okay.
See, that's the whole debate with me. And the woman said, listen, I grew up in a pretty rough area. If my mom had to escort me to a bowling alley, she would say, what are you, nuts? And this girl, the woman, the mother, said, and this is my favorite, which I was not aware of this term, I am a free-range parent. Which
like
I
it.
Thought was nice. Amazing.
Good eating.
Yeah, right? No hormones, no chemicals.
Yeah, that's right.
A cage-free parent.
Tone. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What an idiot. Tasty little baby.
All right. We are fucking insane in this
yeah.
country. And here is the problem. We are all turning into colossal pussies.
Oh,
it's
I
a pussification
totally agree.
Of America.
We yeah. have no idea what's going to kill us or what is going to harm us. And we have to work statistically, mm-hmm. which is I say this all the time. I moved from a house that was up in the hills. The kids would play in the courtyard. The gate would be wide open that led to the swimming pool because a gardener would leave it open. Now, if I put tap water in my kid's sippy cup, my wife would slap it out of my hands. Like, she'd do a slow motion dive for the sink. Like one of those, I don't know, 80s movies where the president
no.
is being shot. Like, no!
Yeah.
No tap water. Meanwhile, the fucking gardener would leave the gate open that led to the place where the kids would drown. while the kids played in the courtyard at age 2.5 all the time. Mm-hmm. And that was not as big an issue as the tap water.
Sure.
We're not. Now, my wife loves the shit out of these kids. It's just what we need to do is work big to fucking small. Al-Qaeda's not going to get you. Your kids are not going to be abducted.
They could be abducted. But it is hard to get both.
Yeah, one's going to squeal.
One's going to
squeal. Someone's going to drop a dime.
But I think 10 years old is old enough. You protect your little sister, whatever. You walk back. And also, there has to be a point where you say, you know, you can't protect them forever. If some, not only say give it up to God, that sounds so weird, but you need to let your kids fly a little bit. Otherwise, they're going to grow up to be super weird comedy writers. No, but they're going to grow up to be weird.
Well, but also, I disagree, though. They're not going to be abducted. We lead every news story with there was an abducted child, and we're all like, ha, ha, ha. By the way, 9 times out of 10, it's their fucking dad who's freshly divorced and he lost a custody case. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you a question. Is it a white family or a black family?
There is no picture, but I'm going to go white.
Okay. Well, then it'll make the news. I was going to say if it's a black family,
just
they'll
kidding.
Get abducted.
There is a picture, and they are white.
Okay. So if it's a black family, we'll hear about it, unfortunately.
I don't think
a black family would say, I'm a free-range parent. That is insanity.
They might mess up English here and there. That could happen to anyone.
Free-range.
That woman, she just sounds like a dumb piece of white trash.
All I'm saying is you're child is not statistically not going to be abducted. If your child is going to be abducted, it will be by a family member.
And a
so let
father.
The fucking kids walk home.
I agree with that. Let them. Kids need a little bit more in the society where everyone gets a trophy and everything's got
drives
a child lock
nuts.
On it. Just let them fall. Let them hurt themselves.
But
don't let them play by power
lines.
Did
anyone fucking read Huck Finn?
Yes.
I mean,
you're going wonderful adventures. down the river.
A black guy and go down the river. No. Experience life a little bit, kids.
I need some fences.
On your own, yeah.
Yes.
When did you guys start walking to school? I started when I was in fourth grade. My brother and I, he was in kindergarten.
Oh, I was in kindergarten.
And then walked to school.
Kindergarten. And I would seriously, in the green belt, stop and take off my clothes and walk the rest of the way in my underoos.
Nice.
I was fine.
In
maybe I wasn't
belt.
Cute
what?
Enough.
Yeah, maybe you weren't hot enough to be abducted.
That's what it was.
You weren't a hot baby. I'll tell you the other side of that coin. I grew up in Dallas, Texas, and something happened. There was a girl at my school that got abducted.
Really?
This is not to be contrarian, but from just like a random dude. And this is such a weird thing, and this is why something's wrong with me. Our teacher came in, and they were like, and she announced to the classroom in fifth grade that they found her body. And my hand shot up, and I go, was she naked? I don't know why I wanted to know that. But this kid got abducted, and it was horrible, and it rocked our community. And then it was almost like a floodgate. I had a friend who was chased on the way home. And so while nothing ever happened to me, I remember I only had a block to walk from my bus stop to my house. This is fourth grade. But I remember just this fear of knowing that this had happened to some girl in my school and just running for my life.
What grade were you in?
She was naked. It was like horrible. I was in the fourth grade.
Fourth grade. She was abducted.
She was younger than me. She was like
killed.
Like second grade. Like
did
strangled.
They ever find the guy?
They found the guy.
What was the story?
I don't know. He's just like a crazy person. It wasn't statistically. It is usually relative. This person was just a gross child toucher, probably.
Wow.
Abducted from. They were having a soccer game, and she went to play on the. And this is a freak thing. You should still let your kids. That's like saying because there's terrorists out there, we shouldn't have free speech. Like, no, you should still let your kids play on it. Whatever. Maybe the kid didn't know the rules. That's the other thing. You don't go with a stranger. He probably didn't grab her. She probably willingly went, and that's not the parents' fault by any means.
Right, but either way, the abduction can happen. Anyone who takes their kid to a park knows that feeling of their cell phone rings, and they get on it, and they start, and they turn their back, and they look around, and they don't spot their kid for a few minutes. I mean, it's not like it's always going to be walking home from somewhere.
You can't cripple your child out of your own fears.
Right.
And you should let your kid walk. That's ridiculous. She sounds like an idiot.
I agree.
Dallas in the 90s sounds
Jesus.
Rough.
Yeah. Hard scrabble, baby.
Good Lord.
Well, the Cowboys were king then. That
was
a golden era.
It was the boys.
Yeah.
All right. What else?
I know, Adam, you will be thrilled with this story. Mm-hmm. For the fourth consecutive year, LL Cool J will be hosting the 57th annual Grammys.
It's great to see that guy finally come out of his shell.
You don't like LL?
Finally gets a hosting gig. No, I don't feel like he needs to host every show.
Yeah. Are you ready for this? He's going to be hosting, I think it's a lip-syncing show, spun off of, I think, the Jimmy Fallon bit that they do. I heard this. I was on The Tonight Show on Monday, and that's where I heard this. So I hope that this isn't privileged information.
Uh-oh.
It's going to be him and Chrissy Teigen.
What?
I heard this. Someone check this on Deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a, I think it's a lip-syncing.
I think she could balance his niceness out with her snark.
Is she snarky?
Yeah. On Twitter she is, so in real life she's got to be, right? Not at all.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know.
I just, my whole thing is LL, certainly a nice enough chap. I just, I feel like there's got to be other names out there who can
Pitbull's
host shows.
Running for it.
You know what? I being in the television business and going out for different hosting roles, you go with what is easy and what works. The Maria Menounos, the Ryan Seacrest, the Mario Lopez.
Non-polarizing
it's like they,
figures.
Exactly. They are not upsetting anyone. Give it to them.
All right. I agree. By the way, the lip sync show, so I see Battle, by the way. It's confirmed via Twitter.
Look at that. Wow. I knew something.
Look at you.
I knew a Hollywood tidbit.
Nice.
I wonder when that just from listening in on a closed door.
More to watch.
That's all I had to do.
All right, LL. Good for you. Ah, may I say this?
Made out to so many of his early 90s songs.
Oh, right?
Doing it.
All right. Mama said shut your mouth for a second. Radioactive Media. Thank you. I know one rap song. I used it. I dusted off my one rap song. Capture new customers. Grow your business. You can do it through podcasting. You do it through radio. You do it with Radioactive Media. These guys, well, they're around for a million years, and they always did radio, and now they're branching out into podcasting. So you can use them. You can generate up to 9 times more leads and reach millions of new customers. So you got a business. You want to grow that business. Might I suggest Radioactive Media? Text the word Adam to 511-511, and let's get started. Text Adam to 511-511 or go to radioactivemedia.net. That's radioactivemedia.net. These guys are super passionate about what they do. You got a business, you want to grow it? Radioactivemedia.net. All right, what else do we got?
Well, this one, you're either going to be all over it or not at all. Super Bowl coming up. Bob Costas, Dan Patrick, Josh Elliott. Those are going to be your main guys for NBC.
Patrick,
but you know what?
Wait. They're not doing play-by-play.
No, they're just the pre-show, like the pre-game, everything,
okay,
all
that.
We'll be talking over the entire thing.
Gotcha.
But you know who else they need out there to interview the celebs, to do the tailgate parties? We're going to need Johnny Weir and Tara Lipinski.
What?
What the?
What? Is there going to be snow? Is that the connection?
They are now the darlings of NBC ever since the Olympics and then...
What do you mean ever since the Olympics? That was like 15 years ago.
But then they hosted something.
Hold on.
Tara Lipinski was like...
No, but they were hosting. They were doing commentary.
And she won. I was like, I guess.
They've loved her for a long time.
Johnny Weir is going to be stabbed and dismantled by Patriots fans in the park, by drunken Patriots fans in the parking lot of the Big Toaster.
It's not going to go well.
He comes across a couple of guys from New England that are tailgating out in Arizona, and they put a few back. They're not going to be easy on him.
Well, it is in the Bay Area, so maybe it'll go okay. Well,
hopefully he doesn't wear his costume.
No, it's in Arizona.
Arizona.
Glendale, Arizona.
Big Toaster.
My bad.
That's all right. All right.
You're right. Everything you said is right. He's going to get killed.
You know, I come from a long line of assholes. My parents are from Massachusetts.
Yes.
I fear for him.
I do, too, because those guys, listen, I know how it works. I've met dumb guys who are blue-collar assholes, and then they're smart guys, but they're not sort of broad-shouldered guys. Then there's the guys from the Boston area, which are – these guys are smart and broad-shouldered and assholes.
Right, Sully.
Yeah, they're – no.
Triple threat.
It's like the Matt Damon, Ben Affleck movie there.
How do you like them, Apple?
But they're going to be interviewing celebrities?
And tailgating parties.
Goodwill hunting.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Just throwing the sharks. Yeah.
Yikes.
What? Why Tara? When did Tara? What's going on with Tara Lipinski? When did she?
They co-hosted a couple different things together, and Twitter blew up. The ratings were amazing. They're actually quite funny.
They
together.
Should host that lip sync show.
Yeah. With LL?
With LL.
No, LL should go to the parking lot and talk to Pats fans.
Actually, really, yeah, they should just switch it.
Yeah. They should. Yeah, he's That's the guy who should be talking to
Maybe
the
having a girl
fans.
There will soften it. Maybe they'll have just one.
And Tara Lipinski?
I don't know.
No, I didn't.
Amazing. Okay.
So wait a minute. They're going to be out in the parking lot? I think they're just going for crazy against type irony, right?
I think, honestly, what I think when they announced it Twitter again was like, whoa, I'm totally going to watch. This is a portion of the audience they probably didn't have before.
That's,
that
yeah.
would say, I would never watch the Super Bowl. I just want to see halftime. These are
That's
the people
me.
That watch for halftime
yeah.
will now watch the pregame. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be it's the women. It's the people that are interested in the fun factor, right. not mm-hmm. the football.
So this is basically saying Mike Tyson's going to do ballet.
Yeah.
And you go, how could he? I got to check this out.
Yeah. Right.
No, this that's, is saying Baryshnikov is interviewing people before the fight.
Yeah.
All right.
Guys are going to watch no matter what. Yeah. Let's get the women to watch, too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah.
It's weird. I mean, he's wildly flamboyant, right?
Yeah, and I will be curious to see what he wears, because that's a big part of it, because he wears amazing things that
I
you can't.
Know.
I'm
I already
so
know.
Into it.
I'll be right. curious to know if he's going to talk about football or just be like,
no.
like, be like, I don't know anything about this.
Totally will.
What's up?
First off, I can tell you the ensemble yeah. already. All right. It shall be. Mm-hmm. Are you guys sitting down? It mark the words. It will be a Patriots jersey.
Okay.
That is cut in half.
Seahawks
that's attached
half.
To a sing that is bedazzled.
Oh.
Like one of Cher's denim jackets Mackey. From the 80s. Like,
okay.
Yep. It's going to be the two jerseys split down the middle, combined, and then Mackey'd out.
See, here's what he should do. Go prison mentality. You pick the team that's most likely to harm you. So that would be a Patriots okay. fans are more aggressive than Seahawks fans.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Join their
right.
gang so you have protection from
that's
them.
Right.
Smart Eliza.
Right.
Don't walk
Smart.
Into the wrong turf. So we're the Patriots. That way, mm-hmm. if a Seahawks fan comes at him, they'll be like, hey, he's one of us, and then right. they'll kill each other, and he can fly away unscathed.
Right. Yeah,
that's
like
what
that.
I would do if I were in tailgate prison.
Yeah.
Which, to me, any tailgate party is a prison.
And Tara Lipinski can just climb up a tailpipe and seek shelter,
yeah, just
right?
Hide, yeah.
I think she actually will throw glitter in the air and disappear.
Ooh.
Yeah.
As a how good essence of a notion.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, like a fairy.
Now, you also have, to figure... These fans are going to be the ones who can afford $4,000 for a ticket.
Yeah,
right?
This is not the run-of-the-mill fan.
Or this, right. is, this is what they've saved up for all yeah. year.
High rollers yeah. for a pretty expensive ticket. A plane from...
yeah, and the
from,
season ticket guys.
My kid went
maybe.
Without braces.
Mm-hmm.
So I could come here.
Yeah, I have always I've like always marveled at how articulate the blue-collar... guys are from that neck of the woods.
Well,
so close
Mac
to
Mac and Sully.
Yeah, yeah. All right, one more. What do we got?
All right, this one I enjoy. Tax refund. Mm-hmm. What do you do if you don't have a whatchamacallit? How's that for your news?
Bank
pretty
account?
Good. If you don't have a bank account.
Is that really the answer?
That oh, is sure. you're going to mm-hmm. go somewhere, pay a ton of fees, and mm-hmm. then basically you lose a ton of money from your tax return. Well, not this time. Walmart stepping up.
Mm.
It's a text time gimmick called Walmart Direct to Cash. They will give you your money
mm-hmm.
right back to you in hopes, probably, that you spend a little at Walmart.
No VIG.
Right?
No beak wet?
Nope.
No juice?
Nope.
No points?
Wait, how does it work? And also, when you said they don't have bank accounts, I was like, what hill folk? And then you said Walmart, because yeah,
it all
what they're saying is instead of going to the check cashing, whatever right. place, mm-hmm. it's going to take whatever percent, we'll take 0%.
Right.
We'll just give you all our money. By the way, in the back of the store,
mm-hmm. right.
we will move this as far back to the store mm-hmm. as we can. And then we will
it.
Give the hillbilly $481 cash.
We'll give you a refund.
Yes.
You bring your stuff.
And
we'll
then you
a
see if you can make it out to the parking lot without spending half of it.
It's right. a fiscal running of the gauntlet.
It's
you've
mm-hmm.
got people with free samples. I think it's a great idea.
It is
and
a great
also,
idea.
So
I'm spend it there anyway.
I don't want to incite anything, but can't be safe walking out to your car.
True.
A lot of money.
You want to lighten that load?
Right.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I'm
yeah.
going to go buy a gun at the gun department.
That's what I... Like, something...
Like, I'll be waiting out
refund,
here.
With your tax refund?
No, to make it out to the...
To make sure I can make it back home.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, they don't do background checks, so it'll be great for you.
Yes.
You just go. No, better yet.
NyQuil and some ammunition.
Perfect.
Get a gun and stay in the parking lot for those who make it through with their money.
That's what I'm
Vigilante
saying.
Vigilante style, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
You can just clean house.
Somebody making opportunity.
Right.
That's what I just didn't want to incite.
It's mm-hmm. like it's
wait in the parking lot.
Duck hunting,
mm-hmm.
but with people with cash checks.
Yeah.
Kill people. Take their money.
Smart. Yeah. Mm. So give them their money and let them spend it in your store.
Not
And then kill them if they make it out. You take the money back. There should be a cloaked Walmart employee with a blue smock outside with a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. Make it out.
Yeah. And LL should host this.
Should we make, can this non-greeter be a special needs person?
Absolutely. You want a retard to shoot you to take your money back.
So we take the guy with the syndrome. We give him the 12 gauge.
That way he doesn't have to go to jail and he can do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And instead of
welcome to Walmart, it's where you going, bitch?
If he wears the smock, it might seem like an endorsement by the corporate.
That's the point.
It could be construed as a... Oh, really? Oh, so you want to have this person.
Yeah, you can't... You're not going to want to... We're giving jobs to the mentally handicapped. It was, you know, an occupational hazard.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be back on the streets. He'll go work at Sam's Club or something.
Now, what about the mentally handicapped guy who's going to get his cash in the back of the Walmart
and try to
get it out of there?
He doesn't have any.
How do we feel about that?
I hope someone's with him.
What retarded person, A, is filing taxes,
and getting a
B,
refund.
Makes enough money to get a refund, and
point.
C, has the wherewithal to be like, going to go get my taxes back?
Is that
horrible? Was that I lost my network deal? Cool.
I think, but you guys stop.
I made him sound deaf.
Stop me if I'm wrong. I have to pay my taxes quarterly, so it's like
too.
I never get any refunds back. I feel like it's not rich folk who gets refund. Mm-hmm. It's poor folk who get refunds.
It's actually no one. No one gets your refund. It's not real money. People think
well,
that
it's
like
your
it's
money.
Found money.
It's your money. But what I'm saying is when you have to pay in quarterly, like I pay in quarterly, you don't get any money back.
You just roll it over.
When they pull it out of your check and you've said you had five dependents, but it turns out there were six or whatever, you claim one and whatever it is, you can get some money back. So in a way, and I would love the Mason-Dixon line of when you get no money back. Refund wise, is it $50,000?
It actually is the Mason-Dixon line. You could you have geographically,
go, literally you can see Mason-Dixon line. Yeah, what do you think that number, Gary? I don't know if there's any possible way to look this up, but what I'm guessing
is how many withholdings you have.
Are you sure? Isn't I pay mine quarterly as well? Isn't that just a decision you make if you're incorporated? Don't you do it that way?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, I don't think anyone who makes $1 million a year gets a refund.
No.
People that make $28,000 a year might get $311 back.
Right.
Because it's taken out of their whatever.
Right.
I want to know what that sweet spot is. Like, once you pass 47.5, no more refunds for you.
Yeah, if you made $1 over, yeah.
Right.
I think it's tacky when people talk about the refunds.
Great CPA.
What's that?
I just have a good CPA because I get a refund.
You get a refund.
Yeah.
But do you pay quarterly?
No.
So... Well, I just think it's two different things.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't
so you do
us.
Get a refund.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not letting
say
it go.
How much good, I made. That was the dumbest thing I've ever
good,
done.
You got a good CPA?
I got a good CPA.
All right.
If anyone wants to talk to him, give me, no.
Give your money in a mattress.
All right, let's bring it home.
That's it.
Going to go get my taxes.
Do you hate my tag?
That was the news on the Adam Carolla Show.
I'm a retarded soundbite.
I'm the worst free-range news person ever.
Mangria up for sale now. Super Bowl coming around. Got to get that Mangria. Go to CorollaDrinks.com.
Going to go get my taxes back.
And my son's got his new ringtone out. Oh. Are you ready?
Yep. Okay. Are you kidding me?
No, I meant the one about the return.
Are you kidding
me? That's what I was hoping the return.
That's my son. He's
that's
got
cute.
A new ringtone. He's a sweet, sweet boy. So, till next time, it's Adam Carolla for Eliza Schlesinger. Amy McKay. Oh, sorry.
Wow.
Allie,
how dare
Allie
you?
Allie McKay. And Bald Brian saying mahalo.
Oh, yeah? Here's my dick.
Oh, my God!
And that was a very funny Eliza Schlesinger back in 2015 on the Adam Carolla Show. All right, before we get to this next clip, I want to remind everybody, if you're listening to us on the Adam Carolla Show feed, good news, we have a whole other feed called Carolla Classics. If you can subscribe to that podcast, we release an episode every Sunday as well. So we have your entire weekend covered. Gio, what can we expect for tomorrow?
Well, we have a correction and an update with some more Stacey Keach for those that heard it last week. Ed O'Neill with Horry and Gracie in studio. Anthony Jeselnik live from Room 5. Vince Vaughn calls in. And the last time Kelly James was on, the most recent appearance he made, back in 2015 with Gina and Brian.
Yes. I'll just give the announcement for this show. Not really an announcement, more of a correction. Last week, we said Stacey Keach, the late, great Stacey Keach, rest in peace. Well, the reason was, the way Gio and I do the show is we have a document that we share that Gio types out very, very nicely, by the way. And we had this next clip featuring Junior Seau queued up. But in the description, we saw the old description where it was rest in peace. We thought Stacey Keach had died.
Pure copy and paste there, not based That's on all. His age or anything about it.
Yeah.
I didn't heard that he died. So it was literally, I left a rest in peace there, and I was meant to change it. And I remember exactly what happened. We were emailing back and forth, or texting back and forth about what time we were going to record, and I was pushing you on a different time. And I just never went back and removed it. And then we read it like, oh, it must be dead because it's on this text document that I put there. No insult to the great Stacey Keach, who's alive and well. And he's still appearing on podcasts. He just tweeted about a podcast he was on just a month or two ago, which made me think, we should perhaps rebook him for a regular episode instead of a one-on-one. It'd be nice to hear him in the studio with the gang.
I agree. All right. But anyway, the clip that we're going to play right now. This one features Junior Seau, who tragically died by suicide. And upon further investigation, they found out that he was suffering from CTE, a disease that was found in a lot of other NFL players. But he did appear on the Adam Carolla Show back in 2000.
Before he tragically passed away on Adam Carolla Show 202, he called in with a Skype session, which does end early, unfortunately, and very indicative of the Skype problems they had at the time. This episode also features Larry Miller and Brian Bishop, who are both in studio for this clip, and they're on the phone with Junior and Adam. This is from November of 2009. Rest in peace, Junior.
Then I might go with the Samoa name.
If you had to pick.
If I had to pick. Yes. Speaking of that, Junior Seau.
Oh, wow.
It's on the phone. Junior Seau?
Adam.
Junior, great to speak to you.
How you doing, buddy?
Good. We're sitting here with comedian Larry Miller and my sidekick, Bald Brian.
All right. Fellas, how you guys doing?
Hiya, pal.
Are you calling from New England, Junior?
No, I'm actually in New York. We're running through it from media, but for the show, obviously.
Junior, by the way, from your alma mater, Bald Brian, USC. Graduated the same year Mike Garrett graduated, but still playing in the league. Junior, what are we, 22 years in the league?
We're 2 decades in the league.
Oh, it's absolutely insane. And, of course, all those years with San Diego, couple years of retirement, correct?
No years of retirement.
Oh, no years.
I graduated like 4 years ago, and then I was called the day after I graduated, and I've been with New England ever since.
Oh, well, something is misread. I read that you came out of retirement on more than one occasion. Or maybe you planned on retiring and didn't retire. Is that correct?
No, there was no planning. They just didn't hear from me, and I got picked up last year in December. Mm-hmm. So that's probably where they were talking about coming back from retirement. I never officially retired.
20 years in the league. Whatever this guy is made out of, I don't know what research we're doing in our country or what the National Council of Defense or research or illness is doing, but they ought to take this guy as soon as he retires or in the off season and just sit and watch him and say, what is this body made of that he can do 22 years as a pro and all the years before it playing football?
I mean, obviously the guy's a specimen. I mean, he was one of the strongest guys in the league.
He played college ball, Rodney Pete.
Wow. Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
And by the way, they just finished that kid. We always talk about one of my kids plays on Adam's old team, the East Valley Trojans, and just finished his third season there. And they did great. He did great. He played every down both ways. He was he's very aggressive, just loves it, loves to tackle. And so I always reported on you. They just finished last weekend. They were in the lost the first round of the playoffs, but they had a great season, and he did great and loves it.
Yeah, well, that's the important part, that you're not twisting his arm to play. So, Junior, by the way, crazy loss the other night against the Colts.
Yeah, it's definitely it was a close game, a great game for viewers to watch, but obviously it hurts us today.
Look, if it's any consolation, you guys covered, number one. number two... I think even though the Pats have three losses, I think they're 6-3 right now, I still think come playoff time are going to be one of the teams that you're going to have to deal with. I mean, the Colts look good, but they really shouldn't have won that game. New Orleans barely snuck by my Rams, who are worse than any junior college team I ever played on at this point. The Giants aren't what they used to be. I think you got to be feeling, even though you had a horrible loss last week, I think you got to be feeling pretty good about your chances, Junior.
Well, we are hoping to kind of recover from, obviously, the big loss that we occurred on Sunday. We go back to work on Wednesday, and we'll see what happens after that. But it's definitely something that we have to get over, and short-term memory has to kick in terms of the bad and the good in the league.
How long, and for you, as far as your career goes, again, graduated USC in 89?
Yeah, USC 89-90.
I mean, how many guys did you play with, and how many guys have you seen come and go? I mean, it's insane that you were in the league for 10 years when hot young rookie prospects came in, fizzled out after 3 years.
Like Ryan Leaf,
sorry. How big a douchebag was Ryan Leaf, Junior?
Excuse me, I couldn't hear the question.
I'm guessing that means massive. Now, you make your home in San Diego still, right?
Yeah, it's always going to be in San Diego. San Diego is definitely my home. Love the surf, and look forward to getting back there as soon as we're done here with New England.
By the way, if I looked like you looked in board shorts, I would constantly be out sunning myself on the beach as well.
Appreciate that.
And the name of the restaurant, by the way, that you own in San Diego is Seau's?
Yeah, Seau's is still there. It's not going anywhere. It's embraced by the city, and I'm very fortunate to have it.
Well, how's San Diego with you and your legacy? I mean, all those years at San Diego, when you go into the Hall of Fame, I'm guessing you'll be essentially wearing a San Diego jersey, yet you end up going and playing for the hated New England Patriots. How are you received when you get back to your hometown?
Well, San Diegans all understand my journey, and they're wishing the best for my journey in terms of, hopefully winning a championship sometime during the course of this journey. But, in terms of San Diego and what I'm doing with New England, it's not bothering them a bit. They are with me. And just as long as we're not playing at my hometown, they would definitely cheer me on.
I find that people are much more forgiving when you're 6'3 and 255 and a 4% body fat. I find they back off. The rhetoric seems to die down just a little bit. So, Junior, obviously 20 years in the league or 22 years in the league or getting close to it with no ring, and it seems like this year feels like a pretty good possibility for you. You feeling good about that?
Well, hopefully this is a year where we can all be proud of, but we all know that there's so many things that can occur and happen during the course of this journey, and it definitely is a journey. And our next battle is New York Jets in New York, and that's going to be a big task.
And one last question for you, Junior. I a lot of the commentators were saying that Belichick going for it on the 28-yard line on 4th-and-2 was a slap in the face to his defensive players. And I sort of took it more as a insanely confident coach, not so much as an attack on the defense. How did you perceive it?
We perceive it as a leader making a decision, us going out there and trying to execute it, knowing that we can win or fail. Indianapolis did a great job of defending it. We end up losing the game, and that's the end of the story.
I would basically say it's the ultimate tip of the cap to the defense, which is if Brady screws this one up, they're going to have the ball on the 28-yard line. So the defense better show up. Let's see. How long? Now, by the way, Junior, if you just retired 5 years ago, you'd already be in the Hall of Fame. You got to look at it that way. I've not known you to be injury prone. How I know you had a couple years back. How are you feeling right now?
I feel great. I've never felt as healthy as I am, and in the last 10 years. I mean, obviously, you know, coming back and really helping out the young linebackers that we have that have a great upside is something that I'm doing every day. And, you know, watching this team grow every day and hoping that, you know, and down the road we can look back and see the journey as something that we want to remember forever.
Well, I guess like a lot of people in San Diego, I'm pulling for you to get that ring, because anybody who's been in the league as long as you've been in the league and as many Pro Bowls as you have under your belt, I feel deserves that ring. And you probably feel in your mind, don't let me put words in your mouth, but if you got the ring at the end of this year, would that be retirement time for you?
Well, I'm not looking to talk about that for this year, but let me tell you this. If I had the ring last year or years previous to this, I would still be surfing.
Oh, you still, yeah, still be serving. Junior Seau, can we give you a plug beside the restaurant?
Please. Yeah, definitely.
Where would you like us to send the folks? You have a website, foundation?
No. I'm basically here in New York promoting our show, Sports Jobs on Versus. And we have a sneak preview coming on tomorrow at 11 o'clock, and our premiere is on December 2nd. So I encourage all the listeners to kind of view into what we're doing with that. It's something that you want to see and something that you'll be proud of.
And that's on the Versus Network.
Yes.
Thanks, Junior.
All right, guys.
Talk to you soon. It's Junior Seau.
What a heck. Again, it's an unbelievable story. And by the way, it just slays me in our lives, everyday life, that, again, cell phone calls, not about you, not about here, not about hooking this up, cell phone calls all sound like he's calling from underwater on Jupiter.
Yes.
And it's just still unbelievable to me that I spend half of every call saying, I think I'm losing you.
Yes. A couple of things. The idea that we live in Los Angeles, I know Junior was calling from New York, but we live in Los Angeles, and there are more places the cell phone doesn't work in Los Angeles than does work. I, by the way, have had I've now eclipsed the 2,000 hour mark of having conversations with people who aren't on the other line. I did 15 minutes worth of yesterday. I did long-winded Jags. And then he stopped and he said, are you there? My cell phone doesn't work in my house. It doesn't work in the canyons. It doesn't work going through a certain intersection on like Santa Monica and Cahuenga. It's like there are a million places the cell phone drops out. But the quality isn't what it could be. And here's my main problem with the cell phone. If it's not going to work, then don't ring. Like, have it not. Here's what I want. I want it to be good enough. Here's what I want. In an airplane, I either want the landing gear to go down and lock, or I want it to stay up and have a red placard light up inside the cockpit. I don't like it where it goes down halfway and then folds in when you land the plane. And sure, that's what the cell phones do, which is the cell phone rings. Oh, all right, let me get this. Hello? Hello?
False hope.
Larry?
Yep.
Hello? Now, I don't know where it gets enough signal to ring, but not enough signal so that you can actually communicate with the person. And then I do a lot of, listen, I got to call you. Oh, hello? Oh, you heard me. Okay, let me. I've done the radio for a million years and had this happen a million times where you actually wish either the phone didn't work or it did work. Not that sort of no man's land that caught in between where you have to do the interview where the right person's dropping in and dropping out and you're asking them to repeat themselves. It should really be a toggle switch, not a dimmer. Either it's good enough to work or not.
By the way, the only time in my life I feel suicidal, and I mean the only time, is after the 40-second chat with the dashboard when no one's on it,
right,
when you keep going,
right,
and I can't take it, and then you, hello, I can't. Oh, at that point, I actually consider going right off the cliff.
I'll give you guys a nice cell phone tip. It happens to me once in a while. I haven't given it out in a while. Whoever calls you on the cell phone, do the, hold on, let me get rid of someone. And for me, I just put the thing by my hip for a minute. Then I come back. Hey, Larry, how you doing? You don't want to know. You'll never ask, who'd you get rid of? All you know is there's somebody less important to you less important to me in my life that I just blew off.
Yeah, but in my life,
it feels good.
The only I know exactly what you mean, but the only thing I'm worried about is that as you put it down, they would still just be hearing the kids chatting in the back. They would know that there's nothing happening.
Well, then you
there.
Put it on hold. Flick it to hold, and then so then I have to hear the girl from Ipanema playing through the
That's
stereo.
What I mean.
Just hit it. Put hold. I'm just saying this. Twice a week, I call my agent, and he says, "Yeah, baby doll, can I call you back?" And I know he's talking to Jon Stewart. That's what that means. That's in my mind. He's talking to one of his clients that's higher up on the A-frame ladder than I am.
You know what? Actually, maybe you're right because I have my flaws. We're all flawed.
When he says, "Hold on, let me get rid of someone," he's talking to Damashek.
Nice.
See, you see, I know where I'm at. You know where you're at by your ratio. You know, and listen. Donald Trump doesn't ever get, Richard Branson doesn't ever get, "Hey, Dick, can I call you back?" Mm-hmm. "Yeah, I got someone on the other line." No, it's always Richard Branson calls somebody up. Hold on. You know, sorry, your pontiff. I must hang up on you. Or whoever they're the guy's talking to, right? Boom. You know where you're at in life by how many of those you get versus how many you receive. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, and you know what? By the way, to be honest, I think I could learn a lesson from this. No kidding, because I don't have that yet, and I should put that in my head. I will still tell the producer of something calling up to find out if I read the script. I will still tell him, "I'll call you right back, and the call I'm on is so I can get the extension so the really big turkey can cook as well in that."
Right.
You know, so I don't have a high, I should put a hierarchy in.
Do hit the hold and just tell them, "Let me get rid of someone." You don't have to say less important than you. Just "Let me get rid of someone." They already know. You know how you feel. And then you sit there on hold and you sort of beam for a moment. Wonder who they're getting rid of. Wonder who they're cutting loose.
You know what? No kidding. I should actually put that into life.
And that was Junior Seau back in 2009, tragically passed 3 years later.
So it's always interesting who has come through the show, who's appeared on it, phoners in studio. And you don't think of 2009 being that long ago, but, you know, a decade's passed. And in that decade, a whole bunch of the guests are no longer with us.
Yeah.
It's really sad, but it's nice we have anything to remember them by pertaining to Adam Carolla and his world.
Exactly. It's a great time capsule of incredible people. All right. We have one more clip to play for everybody, and it features one of my favorite character actors of all time, and possibly my favorite storyteller of all time. This guy knows what he's doing. Ned Ryerson.
From the perfect film. There's only one perfect film, and it's Groundhog Day.
Yeah, I agree. That film is perfect. Ned Ryerson, who's played by Stephen Tobolowsky, and that's who I'm bringing up. Now, I like Stephen. I remember he came in 2010, and as I said, incredible storyteller, and there's a cool fact about him. He played in a band with Stevie Ray Vaughan, and I remember off mic, I went up to him and I talked to him a little bit about it, and he gave me his email. He said, "I'll send you an old demo tape of me and Stevie Ray Vaughan," and he did, and he sent me it, and it was...
I can't believe you followed up. That's cool of you.
Yeah. Anyway.
This is Adam Carolla Show 437. This is the magical episode where Chris met his best friend, Stephen Tobolowsky. We got Kinsey Schofield filling in on news and Brian Bishop in the studio from October 2010. It's the entire interview with Stephen. Amazing episode.
This is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, actor Stephen Tobolowsky, plus Kinsey Schofield with the news and Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, the reason Tommy got his sight and hearing back, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, I'm free. Oh, when Anne Margaret got covered with baked beans, boy, did I want to beat off. But I had nothing in my bag. Get it on! Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. And good day to you, Bald Brian.
I always have coffee when I watch Radar. You know that.
Good to see you, Kinsey.
Hello.
Kinsey, you may know her as a contestant on E's Party Monsters Cabo. I certainly do. And also, I'm reading here that you are a junior Dallas Cowboy cheerleader. That's how's
right.
that work?
That's for all the pedophiles out there.
Yeah.
Just to get them going.
That's all we got. How's the junior part work?
You're just a little girl and you're dancing on the field. I mean, it was old school. It was Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, Deion Sanders.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I was sure. A fetus. I was basically a fetus.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, don't make us feel that old. We all remember those guys playing okay. In the league. Yeah, some of the glory days of the
they
Dallas
were great.
Cowboys.
It was super
Speak
fun.
For yourself, Pops.
Yeah. Oh. Troy and Neon Dean. Well, you don't like Troy because he went to UCLA.
And he's a Cowboy. I'm a Niners fan.
Yeah, all right, all right. So, what do we got planned? Well, I should tell you guys a couple of things. Book's coming out in just a couple of days now, coming out on Tuesday, November 2nd. And it's been climbing the charts over at Amazon thanks to you people. Again, thanks to my loyal listeners. I've not been talking about this anywhere else but my podcast. We're like 300 and something, 500 and something. It's weird. You feel bad until you realize there's 70,000 books. Oh, no, wait a minute. 700,000 books. You want to get depressed, go check on something you did like 8 years ago. Like, hey, let's see how Adam and Dr. Drew's book is doing. Oh, you know, 83,000 on the power rankings with a bullet. But the book was like, I don't know, it was like 350 or 400 or something. And I got on the podcast. I started yapping about it. And last I checked, it's in the top 100 and going into the top 50.
They must
just overall, just all books, not just in one category.
Something I'm wondering, your publishers must have some sort of accurate projections. Obviously, they published more than just this book. They must have accurate projections on how it's going to do, how they think it's going to do, what they expect it to do. Do they share that with you?
They don't share much, but in life, and all you really need to know, it's sort of like, I don't care if the guy's a dick. Does he buy you a ring? Or does he pull out the chair, you know, when you sit down for dinner? It's sort of, my thing in life is I have this sort of adage, which is, it doesn't really matter what the person says. Do you go on a second date with that person? I mean, like, you could go on a job interview and that person be like, oh, you're awesome. You're just what we're looking for. This is exactly it. But if your phone doesn't ring.
Are you saying actions speak louder than words?
That's a good one.
Okay.
You should write that one down. Yeah. And what happened with my book is they made the offer for the next book before this book came out. And so I don't know what they know, but they know something, or they wouldn't have made an offer for the next book, right?
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. It's certainly atypical.
Mm.
Although it was for quite a bit less. So, no.
Spell it.
Damn. Now I'm out. Point is this. Yes, they made the offer for the second book before the first book came out, which meant thanks to the people that listen to this podcast, they were, I think Bald Brian will probably back me up on this. People are constantly confused by the people who listen to this podcast. When Bald Brian had a charity event, we had an event for Bald Brian about a year or so ago. When was that, Bald Brian?
It was almost exactly a year ago. It was November 20th of last year.
We got a large theater.
We need to start even before that, because the first venue that was suggested to us was a comedy club. Oh, well, we'll try and fill a comedy club.
Well,
we'll split the door.
My agent suggested a Sears gardening shack.
Ooh.
Yeah, he said it'll hold. There's a bench that's built into it, but you can put two folding chairs in it if you get a lot of walk up, as he calls it. And I said, what do we do? Wilshire Ebell Theater.
We ended up deciding on the Wilshire Ebell Theater. Yeah,
and the place held, I don't know, 1,000 plus,
1,100. Yeah.
$1,200, and we were charging $100 and $300 a ticket. And my agent said, who's going to this? Where? What's going to happen?
Debbie Downer.
And I said, yeah, he's more like Donnie Downer. But he said, how's this going to work? You know, and by the way, the climate's not good for, you know, live shows. A lot of big names canceling gigs and so on and so forth.
There's a lot of hand-wringing, like, we don't want people we know to be involved because it'll be embarrassing when it's half full, that kind of stuff.
And I said, do not worry. The podcast, the army will come through. They're few, but they're proud. And when the thing sold out, and again, sold out, you know, the $300 tickets went like that. He said, and again, sometimes when people ask questions, they're insulting. Well, they don't realize it, but he said, how? Why? And I was like, because we have a great, loyal group of people that listen to this podcast. We deliver a show to them. We don't ask for too much, but when we ask, they deliver. and they delivered for a good cause. In this case, it was Bald Brian and his cancerous brain tumor. In this case, it's me getting another Lamborghini. But either way,
six of one left on the other.
It's time to step up and pay the fiddler. So now we flew right into the top 100 of Amazon. We're in the top 50, and we're going to just keep going. I want to thank you guys all for the pre-orders and all that good stuff. And I will sign each and every jacket you send to me, as promised. All right. Do we have a news story, by the way?
Just a news story, or is this our preempt
story? Toss one out.
Oh, all right. Mr. Carolla.
Oh, wait, we have a news intro?
And everything?
Yeah,
here we go.
I want the intro, yeah.
Live from the International News Center, next to Donnie's Mini Bikes, this is the news with Kinsey Schofield.
Did you say backsack?
Yeah,
ass crack and back sack in the morning.
I definitely heard that.
I stumbled onto that a few days ago and decided when I get back into morning radio, terrestrial radio, I'm going to be ass crack, you're going to be back sack, and that'll be coming at you in the morning.
I want to be ass crack.
Too late.
I'm left out of the equation, so I'm just going to be bitter.
Well, let's see. Ass crack, back,
you can be
bitter.
Gash.
Yeah. Gash. How's the traffic out there,
romantic. You guys are so romantic. All right. Let us jump into the Father of the Year award. Mr.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen, while traveling with Denise Richards and fam to the Big Apple, went out, got tore up from the floor up, a.k.a. drunk,
yeah.
Brought back a hooker, lost his watch, and then had a complete Black Hawk down, tearing up his hotel room.
Yeah.
Scared.
Hold on. I heard his publicist talk on Entertainment Tonight.
Uh-huh.
He had some medication that didn't agree with him.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Like a pillowcase of cocaine?
Exactly. He scared his porn star / lady of the night so badly she locked herself in the bathroom and called the po-po.
By the way, someone who's used to being violated with a corn cob and they go, sweetie, dial it down a few notches. You know what I mean? While people are filming it. Yeah. You know what I mean? That takes a lot.
Yeah. No.
But here's, let me just say this about publicists. I know it's sort of your job, but when your job, when it becomes a sort of laughable spin, like, well, he was running with the knife because he was wanted to give it to her, and then he tripped and stabbed her 57 times in the back.
Oops.
Just shut the fuck up. If you've got nothing, shut up. You know what I mean? He, according to his publicist, he took some medication, had an adverse condition, a reaction to this medication. Okay. That's the Charlie Sheen I know.
According to his publicist, George Michael is just checking on a possible felony going on.
Just, if you're the publicist, A, don't say anything, and B, if you do, go, look, he's not the president.
He's
not
up.
An airline pilot. He's a celebrity. This is what they do.
Or just no comment.
No
I would have
comment.
Preferred no comment rather than a blatant embarrassing lie.
Oh, so he had some Advil, and he washed it down with, like, some pink grapefruit juice and had some kind of weird reaction. Yeah, it happens all the time.
So he was hospitalized and forced to undergo a psych evaluation. And I don't know. I just feel like he should sit back and ask himself, what would Emilio Estevez do? Because I don't feel like Emilio Estevez would ever get nasty
Not work.
On stuff. Yeah. And he's the highest paid actor on television. The highest paid actor on television you think he could
Well, that's
down.
The beauty. That's the beauty of that's why it's so fun for all of us to see rich, miserable people.
Oh.
Like, that's the show I want to do on A&E. Just a bunch of super rich people just going, oy, I'm so miserable.
Isn't it called Celebrity Rehab?
Oh, do I hate my life. Yeah, but they're not really rich.
Yeah.
Most of them are on the show for a payday.
Right.
So, Sheen, who's getting like, and by the way, you know, we're now at a time when, you know, the cast members from Glee are getting $30,000 a pop and shit like that. I mean, hell, we used to get that when we did the Man Show 10 years ago. They're not getting what they used to get. You know, it's not like the old days when everybody on Friends was getting $2 million an episode or whatever. The fact that Charlie Sheen is getting, I don't know, 2 or 2.5 or whatever it is, 1.8, well close to 2 or into the 2s per episode puts him way the fuck ahead of everyone else out there on TV.
Almost like he was grandfathered in. Because, like, that show's been on for so long, it almost dates back to the time when, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
People got paid that.
Yeah, and so, obviously, the money is not affecting his decisions.
Not positively. Absolutely
no.
Not.
Pull that mic up to your soup cooler. All right, to your tits.
How's it there?
That's
awesome. Is it nice there? Can I skip? Can we be donezo with Charlie?
Did it get closer to your lips or just to your tits?
To how about this?
It goes up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you can lift it up.
There you go. Right on the mic. Don't be shy.
Yeah.
All right, and hell has frozen over. Ozzy Osbourne has signed on to be Rolling Stone magazine's new health columnist.
Oh, really?
He will be focusing on health, sex, and family matters. By the way, I looked it up.
By the way, he's not going to do shit.
Oh, it's a ghostwriter, for sure, for sure.
I'll bet the ghostwriter has someone writing it for him. It's that far removed. First off, you can't understand what he's saying.
No.
Secondly, what are his tips? How to bite the head off a pigeon or crash an ATV in the English countryside? Like, what are his tips?
Well, I looked up what he meant by family matters in hopes that it was the 90s sitcom with Carl Winslow. Unfortunately, it was not. When asked how to talk to your kids about drugs, his response was, "The only time I ever talk to my kids about drugs is when to ask, can you get me some? I smell a Pulitzer, people. Smell a Pulitzer."
So Ozzy's going to do that. But that's just a goof, right?
What an awful publicity stunt.
Yeah. Well, who gives a shit?
That's true.
Steven. Oh, I should give Steven a plug, by the way. Steven has a podcast, Tobolowsky Files, and it's a series of stories about life and love and entertainment in the entertainment industry, and it's available on iTunes. And you can find him at and I'll just spell it, Steven, so it'll be easy. TOBOLOWSKY Files.com.
That's like perfect.
Thank you.
It
perfect
was.
Spelling.
Pride myself on that.
It's pretty impressive.
Kinsey.
Yes.
You got some more news, sweetie Petey?
And now, the rest of the news with Kinsey Schofield.
All right, talk about a fashion faux pas. Spanish prostitutes have been ordered to wear safety vests.
Really?
Yeah, Mayor Joseph Marie Brie, RB.
Mm-hmm.
Total cock block.
Safety vests?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean like orange vests?
Yes.
Oh,
or they'll face a $56 fine. They're trying to ban prostitution or sway from it.
They're like the Caltrans workers who are working at night.
Very unattractive.
Slow down for the hoe zone. So they're not, because the ladies of the night, they wear the fishnet stockings and
boots like mine.
Yeah, and they're not going to get out of the way of any drunk drivers wearing those big stiletto heels.
It's
and
true.
all the crazy eyeliner and eyeshadow and all the makeup caked on makes them a little top heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, most of them are coked out of their brains. Let's I could see
nice.
Them getting run over.
Well, it has nothing to do with their safety, obviously. The mayor has attempted to ban prostitution, and it's just kind of his way of trying to scare them away.
Oh, shaming them.
I know.
The scarlet vest.
It's true.
Wow, but nothing. I mean,
I would wear it naked. I would wear that and nothing else just to tell that mayor what's
up. Yeah, prove it, baby. Well, so wait a minute. What about the poor guy who's picking up garbage with the vest on by the side of the freeway and some dude
accidentally
pulls up,
bends
hey,
over.
Fella.
Accidentally bends over.
How
and
much?
You know what
just a few
next.
Beers in. Yeah. Hey, good looking. What you got cooking?
So it's just a shaming.
Yeah.
It's not a
absolutely.
Safety thing.
And if they don't, they have to pay a $56 fine,
uh-huh.
which that's like at least half a hand job.
So prostitution is legal.
Correct, in Spain.
But they're going to shame them.
Yes.
Yeah,
which
I don't
is
like
rude.
That. And speaking of hand jobs and price.
Sure.
You know, when you go to the car wash and they go Vans, $6 extra,
mm-hmm.
it's just that much more to clean. If you have a huge cock, and let's say a hand job's $50, but you got a Van in your pants, is it $65? There's a little, you know, a little extra carnauba wax, a little extra, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I would think there'd be a little extra there.
I don't think so, because I'm going to stop talking
hold on,
right
hold
now.
Hold on, go ahead. Honestly, this is like one of those Miss Universe. I feel like Mario Lopez. All right. Miss Nevada. When a guy's getting a hand job.
I don't care how big their wiener is. I've never been paid for anything, obviously, because I'm a virgin, mom and dad, listening
mm-hmm.
in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that mm-hmm. that is pretty ruthless to try to charge somebody more for having a big wiener. They should be rewarded for having a big
but
wiener.
But don't you think they've already led a blessed life?
With their big wiener?
Yes.
Probably.
They've had it too good for too long.
Big cock literally opens doors. Literally opens doors. It gets there before you do. You know what I mean? All the opportunities, all the dates, all the good press. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't hold it against them.
But you're saying you would not charge extra for a handy on a big joint.
Avi, I would never charge anything because I'm generous like that.
Freebie.
But no, I wouldn't charge
pro more. Bono. Yeah.
It's like because you said bone, like so, boner.
Yeah, it's good. So he wants the prostitutes to wear the orange vest.
He showed us.
All right. I bet they'll modify him and make him sexy. You know, they're right. Mesh already.
I cut the ass out of them in case they're a little too long.
Well, you know, they're already sort of mesh.
You could cut booby holes out. And
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy. There's Juanita. You can't miss her with those xenon headlights in the dead of night, even on a moonless night. Sheila, stage four. Sheila.
Oh my gosh, you're not supposed to wear white after Labor Day. Anyway.
Yeah, there's always a little. People can't see the picture, by the way. You're staring at.
I'm looking at a picture of a Mexican prostitute wearing white.
Yeah.
FYI.
What other stories you have?
Okay, this really kind of ticked me off. As you may
even
know,
even more than this prostitution thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
As you may know, Celine Dion gave birth 4 days ago to twin boys.
Yeah.
And as of right now, she's claiming that she has yet to name the children. She says she's read over 15,000 names, yet nothing is stuck. Like she didn't have 9 months to ponder this whole situation.
Sure.
Celine claims that the struggle is strengthened due to the fact that her older son Rene Charles has been raised in the USA and wants an American name, but her mother wants a French name. Newsflash, she has had two children.
She just gave birth to children.
There's an American name and a French name option right there.
Like, right. And she has, isn't Rene the name of her
husband.
Octogenarian husband? He's an old guy, right?
Yeah.
He's so he's creepy.
He's a corpse.
Do you guys ever buy this stuff when the guy, whether it's Elvis or this dude, when they go, well, I met her when she was 9 years old, but we didn't start dating until after she was 18. Like, okay, first off, if that's true, creepier than fucking her on her 12th birthday.
Oh.
I mean it. What are you just hanging around?
Biding my time.
Just rubbing your hands together.
Oh.
It's going to be awesome.
Someday.
She turns 18.
Actually, I know exactly which day.
Yeah, I don't buy it. I'm sure they're boffing at 15. But then,
imagine how disgusting that would be for her. Bopping at 15.
He was like a manager. Was he a manager?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is. I mean, it's a landing strip for creepiness. There,
it is.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
is. And so how much of that? Well, Elvis would just go up to Priscilla's bedroom back in Germany and hang out and talk for a couple hours.
I can totally justify that, though, because those two are totally hot. But Renee and Celine Dion.
Hold on, let me write this down. Now, what if Mario Lopez was asking you this question, like a Miss Universe competition?
I am not into AC Slater.
Oh, you're not. All right. But you're saying unattractive people should not be having
Zach Morris.
What about Zach? You like Zach?
I love Zach.
So Elvis and Priscilla are hot enough to have sex, even if
totally.
She's 14.
I mean, like, get down. Go to town.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
But you're saying Celine Dion not attractive enough to have sex at 14, and
you know,
he's too bald?
It's not Celine Dion, but her husband's face could stop a freight train.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he is a walking corpse.
Uh-huh.
I would watch Celine Dion as long as that's the only view I'm getting.
Of the porn.
Correct.
Uh-huh. So, again, based on how you look, whether your sort of attractive index, that's how you decide whether it's okay for statutory rape?
Are we judging me right now?
No, I'm
I just want
curious.
To stop, collaborate, and listen. Are we judging me right now? I'm just laying it out there.
You're saying Priscilla was hot when she was 14, and right. Elvis was hot when he was 20.
So I'd watch that. I'd celebrate that.
No, but it would be all right with you.
Yeah, I'm totally cool with it.
But Celine at 14 and
Creepy McCreeperson
at 35, not going
to
do it.
Prefer not to witness that.
I understand. All right. So they have a kid. I know they built a water park in their backyard, by the way, in Florida. Which I love. Remember that story about 8 months ago? They built like a full-scale, like, Wet and Wild water park in their backyard of Florida.
I just think that these people are absolutely ludicrous. I mean, that's having... You've had 9 months to name these fetuses that are just chilling. They're not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You've got 9 months to sit on it. And I just feel like she's out of her godforsaken mind to come out 4 days later and be like, well, we haven't decided yet. Oh, my God.
Well, yeah, but really.
So many options.
But who gives a shit, like, before two anyway? I mean, really.
What do you call them before two?
Yeah, it's just like, you know, a little.
Baby number one, baby number
two. Yeah, it's like, well, the one has a name, right?
Well, no, she just gave birth to twins.
Oh, okay. All right.
So
I was thinking of Renee.
That's what I'm saying. Her son was like, well, I want an American name. Mom wants a French name. You've got two options right here.
She'll come up with something.
My God, they have a lazy river.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
You see their house? This is it's insane.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, the water fucking park in their house.
Can we go back to envisioning Elvis and Priscilla getting down, though?
Yeah.
All right.
Nice 11-year-old Priscilla Presley. Oh. Yeah, it's hot. Yeah. All right. Nothing like that new pube smell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's it?
Yes.
You're done?
Well, I have an extra one, but you guys have to tune in.
Oh, yeah. A little Super Twitter secret. Extra. That's right.
Yeah. If you guys want to know.
With Kinsey Schofield.
Nice job, baby girl.
Thanks.
That part. I do. Listen, I think it's all right for attractive people to do things that non-attractive. But it's interesting, whereas a big cock guy can't get away with anything in your book.
Oh,
but
no,
if it's an attractive guy,
awesome.
Then he can get away with statutory rape.
I'm just saying I wouldn't charge him more. I'm celebrating that aspect of his
life.
Oh,
I see. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right, Steven, do you celebrate the big cock guy?
I celebrate it daily.
Well, on the wow. regular.
Or twice a day.
Twice a day.
Twice a day.
You put the prayer blanket down toward caca?
I only try to see myself naked twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
Because it all, you know, I otherwise it confuses me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't like to think about that too much. I think that, you know, people, they did a whole thing about people being attractive. Mm-hmm. And they did a whole beauty contest at this university, and they showed these pictures of these people, and they said, who is the most attractive people? Who would you want to do? Mm-hmm. And everybody voted for number 16, the 16th person. They said this was the most attractive person. But the deal was they only had one real person's picture of the 16 people, and everybody else was an amalgam of other morphed pictures, and the 16th picture was an amalgam of like 2,000 faces that were put together. So this person, who everybody said was the most attractive, didn't even ever exist. Mm-hmm. And so the scientist who did this little study said that actually attractiveness isn't attractiveness at all, but it's just being average. And guys like me have...
Wow.
Have different features that are not average. I would be like that first guy that no one would vote for. No one would vote for, mm-hmm. but I don't have the average
but
features.
But maybe since it's an amalgamation of many factors, maybe in a way you're seeing a large variety of people in one face, and somehow that's attractive, especially to males.
That's the deal. That's what the scientists say you find attractive is that you are finding the quest for variety in that one person.
Interesting.
I would just like to say that the word amalgamation makes my brain bleed.
Yeah.
Ooh. I mean, it's happened a lot.
Yeah, get an ear pun, baby. All right.
Speaking of seeing yourself naked, guess what I did today?
Uh-oh.
It's come up on the show before, so I thought it was appropriate to bring it up.
Sure.
I did the sensory deprivation thing that Joe Rogan kept talking about. You know the floating, the sensory deprivation tank?
Sure, yeah. Joe's, for those of you who don't know about this, it was all the rage in the late 70s, early 80s, and they even had places, much like they have tanning salons today. It was one of those, as a matter of fact, now that I think about it, it was advertised in the LA Weekly, and it took place in West Hollywood on Santa Monica Boulevard, and I realized these were just gay guys fucking each other. and there's every one of these things eventually just turns into a gay guy's butt fucking, they had things where you could go into these tanks. So you go into the tank, they have a very high salt solution, so you're buoyant in the water. They heat the water to just your body temperature, so you essentially don't feel it. You're deprived of all stimuli.
There's blacked out.
Pitch black. And without the use of mushrooms or pot brownies or anything, you close your eyes, and I guess your mind just starts going wild.
Yeah, your mind goes wherever you sort of want it to. You want to do some deep thinking, you want some meditation or whatever. The only drawback, and there's really no way around this, is like, you know, you're enclosed into like a little tank, so you're you're floating. So you're constantly ever so slightly bumping into the edges because you're just floating.
Right.
So your toes, your top of your head, if you have hair, your fingers, whatever, you know, whatever you're doing, you're bumping ever so slightly into the edges.
Right.
But that being said, it was very cool.
And what do you wear trunks? Do you go in the nude? Nude.
Nude.
Where do you go
they,
to do
they
this?
Have you, they ha- there's a, it's inside of a private room with a shower. So you go in, you shower first to get you all your whatever off you. Then you do the thing. Then you shower at the end to get all the salt off you.
Well, and to get the load the guy dropped on his boyfriend before you got there.
Yeah, it probably comes off, that too. Off, probably comes off, too.
And how much was it?
It was only $40 for like an hour. Well, it's supposed to be an hour and a half session, but they were underbooked that day. It's like, stay as long as you want.
Wow. So it's like $40. But plus, here's how the scam works. They go, it's $40 for an hour, and you go in there, and about 12 minutes in, they go, this guy doesn't fucking know where he is. And they move the clocks ahead to an hour, and they go, all right, time to go. It's been an hour, because you'd get out and go, exactly. It's been an hour? I didn't feel like
feels
anything.
Like 15 minutes. Like, yeah, it happens in there.
So did you hallucinate?
Nope. But no, I did a lot of thinking. Just let my mind go and some clear thinking.
Did you find it more therapeutic than like a jacuzzi or a steam bath or something like that?
Different, because the jacuzzi and the steam bath are very hot, and you know with the jets on your muscles, it feels nice. It was very surreal at first because obviously you're blacked out. You're shut out from any light or any sound. And then you are really floating on your own. I mean, you're weightless, you know what I'm saying? Your head is supported, your back is supported, everything's supported.
Would it be the kind of thing that, if you were a creative person, that you would say, once a week you should do this for an hour, just to really get your juices flowing or get your thoughts in order?
You would hate it. You personally, because you're hypervigilant, you know what I mean? You'd constantly be thinking about your fingers hitting, just brushing up against the side. But I think most people could turn their brain off, you know what I'm saying, and just sort of like drift away.
Here's what would happen is I would get into that tank, I would start drifting away, and at some point I would hear a fucking conversation that someone's having on a cell phone like down the hall, and it would grate on me and bug the shit out of me.
Well, you can't hear that, but you can, you know what you can do is you can hear when, say, the other person in the other room is taking a shower, you can hear the water in the pipes and the walls.
Will they pump in some Enya?
They can do actually music and video. They actually have a TV screen.
Wow. Well, that's.
But I didn't do it. I was in blackout thing. But yeah, you can study for a test. I suppose you probably get some really good study going on.
I was doing a movie and I was going to be eaten alive by piranhas, and so they did a full body cast of me where they covered me in this stuff. And it was like, and they put straws up my nose so I wouldn't die.
They had to make a mold of you,
To make a mold of me so the fish would eat my face and my hands and my, you know, they would eat my whole thing.
Those ivory merchant guys think of everything.
And they said that you're not going to hear any sound, you're not going to see any light, and if you start, this was the part that bothered me. They said, if you start having trouble breathing, stick your thumbs up. So, of course, that already put the thing in my mind that I'm going to have amazing trouble breathing. And so I'm encased in this plastic, and I was fine for about 30 minutes. And then after about 35 minutes, the plastic started heating up, and I felt it starting to compress. And I felt like it pressing the little straws in my nose, and I couldn't quite breathe, so I did the thumbs thing. And the mofos did not come and do anything for me in the thing. And so naturally, I start panicking because I am sensory deprived.
Thumbs up is not a good signal for help. That means, hey, we're cool. Or
Fonzie
got the jukebox up and running or something, you know.
It was a near-death experience.
Wow. Oh,
it was not good.
My grandfather went the same way. Thumbs up is not a signal for anything that's bad. And yes, I would freak out as well. I would also fart into that straw as soon as that stuff dried out. Kinsey Schofield, thank you so much for coming in and doing a yeoman-like job. You love me? Wow. Stephen Tobolowsky, thank you so much for coming in. And again, you can find this wonderful series at iTunes and go to www.tobolowskifiles.com. And until next time, and again, we're going to check out my book, and we're going to check out Amazon, and we're going to check out Funny or Die as well. Thank you all in advance. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Bald Brian saying mahalo.
And now, your Adam Carolla Extra.
All right, as promised, one more extra bonus news story. Kinsey?
All right, if you've ever wondered why Eeyore is such a negative Nancy, we've discovered that Disney's Magic Kingdom is not so magical.
Winnie the Pooh?
Yeah, Winnie the Pooh.
Eeyore?
Eeyore, according to a survey...
He's about, the donkey?
Yeah, the one that's always sad.
Yeah.
His tail's always falling off.
Yeah.
I lost my tail. According to a survey of the best U.S. companies to work for, Disney ranked 41 dozens below the Army. People that are, like, losing limbs in Afghanistan.
Really?
Disney ranked worse than that.
Well, Disney, they're cheap fucks. I mean, that's part of the problem.
Well,
I did a whole fucking deal with those asswipes where they wasted a fucking half my life talking to the animation guys about doing this, developing that, and doing this, developing that, and doing this, developing that. And we finally settled on what we're going to do. They were like, yeah, well, we'll give you $633 an episode and none of the merchandise. How's that sound? And my agent, James Baby Doll Dixon, was he was really surprised. He's like, I have not heard a three-digit offer in a long, long time, and no ownership and no anything. They're sort of like, hey, you work for us for free, and you don't own anything, and if this thing ever takes off, you don't really get
to
participate. And then you go, well, no thanks, because this wouldn't be a good deal if I was fucking swinging a hammer, but I work in show business, and it's a fucking retarded, and by the way, semi-insulting deal.
I hear Carolla's pulling down three figures an episode.
Yeah. And then they go, yeah, me and Charlie Sheen, and I'm going to go trash Ramada Inn. And then they go, oh, okay, well, moving on.
Right.
Like, they don't even come back with a, oh, we're kidding, all right, here's a little more money or anything. It's just... You just fucking negotiate.
They just peaced out?
They just go, all right, peace out. We're good.
Yeah, apparently in Paris, Disneyland saw three suicides this year of employees. And they insist on referring to their employees as characters, too, which I think is a little awkward.
Yeah, but a lot of businesses do that, associates or team members. It's always sort of condescending. Like, listen, I'm picking up garbage and cleaning toilets. I'm not a fucking team member.
I feel like I'd be confident saying I am a Target team member.
Yeah,
I would
like
want
that
on a business card.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're on the bench anyway, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When you're a Target team member.
We're platooning you with a special needs greeter. Sorry.
The manager comes out and taps his left arm.
Sorry.
I just thought
roll in the wheelchair,
you
literally.
Gave it to all. Let's see if we can bring it home for you.
Yeah.
I just thought it was funny, though, that all four branches of the military ranked higher than Disney.
Well, first off, expectation levels aren't great when you're going to Afghanistan. And you've barely got a GED.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? No, I'm serious. Like, when people enter the military, it's usually, it's a last case, you know, it's
right.
A worst case sort of, fuck, this sucks, my life sucks, I guess I'm not Harvard bound, I'm going to enter the military. That's what you do. And you don't expect the food to be delectable, you don't expect the accommodations to be awesome, you don't expect much out of it.
Right.
So when you get there and the food's not too bad, and by the way, I've talked to service guys where they go, you know, food's actually pretty good, you know, it's sort of a surprise. When you go to Disneyland and it sucks... You're disappointed because you've had it built up.
You're onto something about the expectation levels. I mean, think about the movies you grew up with or you've seen recently about each one. The Lion King versus the Tillman story.
Right. Pat Tillman,
that's
you go,
right.
All right, we set the bar down pretty low. Hey, I guess if I don't get shot by a guy in my own platoon in the first 48 hours, I'm way ahead of the game.
Win.
Mm-hmm.
Google ranked number one, though. Go Google.
Oh, yeah. Well, because Google's like... Hey, man, you want to bring your pets or your life partner or wear one flip-flop or just to hang out?
Do you
or...
not want to shower? Because that's totally cool with us.
If you don't want to work today, but you want to play this impromptu Connect Four tournament we got going on the first floor, you can come join in, and there's free pizza. Like, yeah.
We're going to need you to look at porn today.
Yeah.
All
you just
day,
cruise
day.
You porn and play Connect Four. That'll be awesome. Here's some free pizza. Try not to beat off on it. I don't consider that a topic.
Or do. See if we care.
Yeah, whatever we care. Yeah. We make a ton of money. All right, so don't work for Google.
No, do work for Google.
Do
one.
Work for Google.
Don't work for Disney.
And if you have to go into this man's army, so be it.
And we respect our army men.
Oh, yeah.
We love them.
Listen,
I feel the same way with the cops and the army men and all that stuff. Listen, I'm glad you guys are doing what you're doing. I'm glad you're out there protecting us and all that kind of stuff. But let's not kid ourselves. You're not the best and the brightest. You wouldn't be doing what you're doing if you were the best and the brightest.
Yeah, make sure you cut this off about 35 seconds ago.
No, once in a while there's a Pat Tillman. But for every Pat Tillman, there's just some jack-off who played on the JV football team who wanted to shoot people.
45 seconds ago.
Thank you.
That was your Adam Carolla Extra.
And that was my BFF, Stephen Tobolowsky, on the Adam Carolla Show back in 2010. All right, that'll do it for Carolla Classics today. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you again to everybody for hanging out with us on this lovely Saturday. So we'll see you in a little bit. Until then, my name's Chris Loxamana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Halt and get it on.
Pluto TV, the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 channels and thousands of movies on demand completely free. Pluto TV never asks for a credit card. You don't even need to sign up to watch for free. Pluto TV is easy. It's completely legal. And it's the best way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies for free. You never pay for TV again by downloading Pluto TV. Not sure what you're waiting for. You can be rolling in a matter of moments. Download Pluto TV for free on all your favorite devices. Do it today, including your phone and Roku and Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStations, and anywhere else you stream. And also, don't forget about my channel, Chassis, C-H-A-S-S-Y, Chassis Channel. Number 501, it is the best. It is Pluto TV.